of course, the tragedy of the synagogue in Manchester. In other news, we might well save God save the King, but he seems to have saved many, as folk have rushed to get cancer checks. Here's King Charles speaking in a video message on Friday.
Thanks to early diagnosis, effective intervention and adherence to doctor's orders, my own schedule of cancer treatment can be reduced in the new year.
To the US, horror in Hollywood.
Breaking news, TMZ now reporting that Hollywood producer and director Rob Reiner and his wife have been found dead inside their Los Angeles home.
And back here in the UK, it will be the result of the BMA ballot, but what will the doctor's orders be about strike action? Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Australia's Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has described the Bondi Beach terror attack as an act of pure evil.
An act of terror, an act of anti-Semitism, an attack on the first day of Hanukkah targeted at the Jewish community.
15 innocent people aged 10 to 87 were killed in the attack in Sydney. Police say a 50-year-old father who was shot dead and his 24-year-old son who is in hospital were behind the attack. The older man had a firearms licence. News reporter Rhett Burney says Mr Albanese has promised tougher gun laws.
I think the debate is playing out at the moment where the questions are being raised toward the authorities, toward the government, as to how does somebody, why does somebody even require 6 firearms? How did this slip through? And how did it get to the point that they were able to then use them to commit such an atrocity?
Police forces across the UK say they're increasing their visibility among Jewish communities over Hanukkah. The Hollywood director Rob Reiner has died in what police have called an apparent homicide in Los Angeles. The bodies of the 78-year-old and his wife Michelle were found inside their home yesterday. Reiner was best known for directing films including When Harry Met Sally and This Is Spinal Tap. A poll to decide whether this week's doctor's strike in England will go ahead has just closed. The Health Secretary, Wes Streetings, warned lives will be put at risk if resident doctors walk out for 5 days from Wednesday. The result of the ballot is expected to be revealed later. The pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai has been found guilty of national security offences in Hong Kong. The 78-year-old British citizen now faces life in jail. The media tycoon became a key figure in a wave of anti-Beijing protests 5 years ago. Manchester City have closed the gap on Premier League leaders Arsenal to just 2 points after their 3-0 win over Crystal Palace. Among Sunday's other results, third place Aston Villa beat West Ham 3-2 and Sunderland beat Newcastle 1-0. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 96.49. It closed down 54 on Friday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, heavy rain across northern England, Wales and in the West Country, dry elsewhere with some sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a sharing bag of Doritos Chilli Heatwave for just £1.45, down from £2.50 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of large stores, Doritos 180 grams and 2nd of January. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after 7, Monday, December the 15th, horror at Hanukkah. But the very best and the very worst of humanity played out in front of your very eyes. The shooting of those innocent people, one a girl of 10, and the extraordinary, the very best, the bravery of that shopkeeper who tackles one of the gunmen. Extraordinary. We'll give you full details and then ask, given, of course, noting the horrors of the Manchester synagogue, could something on that scale happen here? What is the cause of anti-Semitism? What does it date back to? Full coverage of that. Meanwhile, back here in the UK, as I said earlier, we now await the doctors, resident doctors' vote. But what will their decision be?
Patients, health leaders and politicians alike wait with bated breath as we find out later whether half of the medical workforce will go out on strike this week. I'm LBC's Henry Riley at Chelsea and Westminster Hospital.
As you heard on the LBC News Bulletin, one of Hollywood's most decorated filmmakers, Rob Reiner, behind movies such as When Harry Met Sally, The Princess Bride and others, is found dead with his wife in apparent homicide. Alan Hamilton is with the LAPD.
Upon arrival, they determined that there were two deceased individuals inside of the residence. The Los Angeles Police Department is now conducting an investigation at this residence here on Chadbourne, and that investigation will continue over the coming days.
And back again to the UK. Never mind God Save the King. He seems to be saving many of us. Here's a video message that was put out on Friday as part of the Channel 4 Stand Up to Cancer campaign.
My most heartfelt thanks to the doctors, nurses, researchers and charity workers involved in diagnosis and treatment programs.
And apparently you have been going in your thousands to have your checks. I'd hope they've all turned to be negative, but tell me your stories later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
They merely went to celebrate Hanukkah. Hundreds of members of the Jewish community in Bondi in Australia gathering on the beach for the annual event. It's called Hanukkah by the Sea, when this happened.
Oh, my God.
Two gunmen opened fire and maintained fire for up to 30 minutes. As you've heard on the bulletins, 15 people were killed, including a 10-year-old girl, a British-born rabbi, Eli Schlanger, and a Holocaust survivor. Two police officers are among the 42 injured. These eyewitnesses told Sky News how the terror unfolded.
I don't know how I didn't get hit. There were bullets all around me. All I can do is screaming, where is my family? Where is my little girl?
I was actually hiding behind a parking meter. To my right was a police officer laying on the ground, returning fire. I was shot at by one of the gunmen.
Now, the two gunmen are father and son. The elder, a 50-year-old man, is dead, with his 24-year-old son, Naveed Akram, arrested at the scene and treated in hospital. He has critical injuries. Speaking at a press conference last night, the New South Wales Police Commissioner, Mal Lanyon, confirmed the father had a firearms licence and six firearms had been recovered as part of their investigation.
We are satisfied that we have six firearms from the scene yesterday, but also as a result of the search warrant at the Campsie address. Ballistics and forensic investigation will determine this morning that those six firearms are the six that were licensed to that man.
An update last night from Australia's PM, Anthony Albanese.
What we saw yesterday was an act of pure evil, an act of anti-Semitism, an act of terrorism on our shores in an iconic Australian location, Bondi Beach, that is associated with joy, associated with families gathering, associated with celebrations. And it is forever tarnished by what has occurred last evening. This was an attack deliberately targeted at the Jewish community on the first day of Hanukkah, which, of course, should be a joyous celebration. And the Jewish community are hurting today. Today, all Australians wrap our arms around them and say, we stand with you.
Now, as victims, families, survivors and others try to come to terms with exactly what caused this, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has blamed Albanese for the attack. He wrote to the Prime Minister, blaming him and his call to recognise a Palestinian state for pouring fuel on the anti-Semitic fire. And speaking last night, Netanyahu urged leaders worldwide to act more strongly.
Anti-Semitism is a cancer. It spreads when leaders stay silent. It retreats when leaders act. I call upon you to replace weakness with action, appeasement with resolve.
Let's get straight to Australia, to Sydney. Diane Coveney-Garland is news director at 2SM Radio in the city and joins me now. What are the latest news lines emerging, Diane? Good morning.
Good morning. The latest thing is that there is actually a vigil being held at Bondi as we speak. Hundreds and hundreds of people have gathered there. It's still fairly light outside because we have daylight saving. People have candles and things like that, and they're just gathered there in memory of those 15 people who lost their lives in that shocking attack in Bondi yesterday.
Are any of the relatives of the father and son involved as the gunman? Are they speaking yet, Diane? If so, what are they saying?
No, not at this point. To my knowledge, they haven't been speaking. And I did read that the 24-year-old man, Naveed Akram, he was actually examined by ASIO in 2019 over his links to Islamic State. However, police have been quick to say that there was not really much in that. And then the concerns have been regarding the fact that his 50-year-old father, Sajid Akram, actually had a license to legally own six firearms. Now, police are refusing to say at this point in time what sort of weapons they were, but they appear to be high-powered weapons and easily refillable with the bullets so that they could get lots of shots out just in a couple of minutes.
And just to help my listeners here in the UK, ASIO is Australian Security Intelligence Organisation, just to tell them. Diane, what can you tell us about Ahmed Al-Ahmed?
Oh, look, he is an absolute hero. He's starting to recover. He actually took it upon himself. He's a 43-year-old. I think he owns a fruit and vegetable shop in Sydney, suburban Sydney. He was at Bondi Beach, and there's video footage, which I'm sure has gone global at this point in time, where he's standing there, and next minute he just crash tackles one of the gunmen and literally crash tackles him, gets hold of the weapon, holds the weapon, the firearm, points it at the gunman, and then after that we don't see a great deal. But then what happened after that is he actually was shot twice. The hero was shot twice, but everyone from the Prime Minister and the Premier of New South Wales and so many people are just saying
Indeed. He's
an absolute hero.
Just to clarify, who shot Ahmed Al-Ahmed, the police forces?
To my knowledge,
it's
one of the gunmen, but
right.
It's a little bit not very clear there, because the weapon was thrown down on the ground, so he was holding a firearm, but because the two men had six weapons between them. Initially, yesterday, police were concerned that there may have been a third gunman. They have ruled that out now. There were only the two. But initially, there were concerns that there was a third gunman. So we're not exactly sure how he was shot. But the good news is he's recovering, and I dare say he'll get a hero's welcome.
Well, he should. Lastly, we read that it took some time for the police to attend the scene. Are there questions being asked about how quickly they got there?
There are questions about that. Now, police were adamant that they were patrolling in the area, and not necessarily right at Bondi Beach, but they were patrolling in the area at the time. There have also been questions about how long it took some of the paramedics to get there. And the authorities have said, look, it was a live scene. They were actually under fire themselves.
Diane, I'll let you get back to running the news department there. Thank you, Diane. Coveney Garland is news director at 2SM Radio, based in Sydney. Now, well, I'm not happy to say, but it's a privilege to say that we've actually got an eyewitness. Tommy is, I think, initially from the UK, and now you live on Bondi. Is that right, Tommy? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I do now live in Bondi, and unfortunate circumstances for the first time to be on the show as well.
All right, mate. Well, I'm grateful for your time this evening, your time. Tell us how it unfolded. What did you hear, and what happened next, Tommy?
Okay, so I was actually at the barbecue area, so the area where the Hanukkah festival was. There's public barbecues there. It's a very popular part of the beach. I was there a few hours before having a barbecue, sitting down on the benches having a barbecue, and we actually left. We came back home, we went to get some more food, and we were going to head back down there. As we were about to head back down, if you can imagine like a really busy day, Sunday at Bondi Beach, and all of a sudden, within the click of the fingers, someone screams evacuate. Hundreds of people charging towards us from the beach, dropping everything, dropping phones, dropping towels. People are screaming, there's shooters. I just straight away said to my girlfriend, get in the car, stay here. And I went to try and suss out exactly what was going on. My first impression was that maybe it was some gangland shooting and that says somebody had been shot. But as I was heading in the direction that people were running from, you could just hear continuous pop, 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 pop. Just kept on going one after the other. I quickly sort of understood what I thought was probably going on. As we were at that barbecue area earlier in the day, we saw kind of like Jewish people setting up some kind of festival, but we wasn't 100% sure it was even a Jewish festival. There were just some people starting to set up some decorations, things like that. There is also a children's play park in exactly the same area, where there's lots of families and children, all there. And we were surrounded by these people all morning and early afternoon as we were there. So I ran in the direction of the gunshots. As I arrived, I saw lots of commotion happening on that bridge. At that point, there was only about two or three police officers there. It was literally just, it was like a carnage scene. Everyone was fighting, screaming. The police were pushing the people. I wasn't actually aware at that moment that I'd run into the gunmen themselves. And I think they had just been shot. They were on the floor and people were trying to attack them and get to them. And the police were trying to push people away. And from what I've learned later on, they were trying to resuscitate one of them.
You did actually saw the two gunmen, did you, Tommy?
I saw them. I saw people getting loaded into the back of the police van, which I have later found out were the gunmen, because what happened at that moment is there was a few locals who were absolutely furiously trying to get into the van, hit the van, the police van, the window got smashed. The police officers were also completely breaking down. The police lady was having a panic attack and holding on to the side of the van. She started punching the van out of anger herself. It was just horrific. And at that moment, I was trying to say to the guys that, hey, like, is it just these? Is there more? At that moment, there was rumors that there was a third one. There was another one still around. At that moment, I walked into what you could only describe as a horror movie. I then crossed over that bridge, the one that you're seeing in all the videos of the gunmen in. I crossed over that bridge and I went down onto the grass. And all I can say is that there were dead people everywhere. There were bodies everywhere. There were so many bodies and not enough people trying to help them. There were like people were putting blankets over some of their heads. Some of them you could tell they were just completely cold and dead straight away. There were others that were people frantically trying to resuscitate, and like three, four people and one person trying to pump their heart to bring them back to life. Everyone was covered in blood. There were fully grown men lying on the floor, screaming and begging and praying. And I then looked around and actually looked towards the children's park, where I then realized there was also a dead body blocking the exit to the park, and there was loads of children hiding in the park, screaming and crying. They were trapped in there. They couldn't get out of the park. It was just horrific, and the only thing I could do at that, like, I wanted to try and comfort some people. I sort of put my hand on a few of the men's back. But what did you say? You say, hey, are you okay? You're speechless. Everybody was speechless in that moment. Nobody had any words to say at all to one another. It was just, it just kind of a surreal experience. You're just experiencing everything that's going on. You're experiencing people trying to bring people to life. I then looked around. I counted about 11 or 12 bodies that were completely out cold, gone in that moment. There was a lot more which weren't moving at all, which people were trying to bring back to life. Yes. There's an area just to the right of that where there's a very, very popular outdoor gym. Like, you could kind of compare it to like Venice's outdoor gym area.
Yep.
Everyone is on a busy, sunny Sunday. This area is pumping. So I then looked over there. There were more dead bodies all over the grass there. My thoughts in that moment, I'm actually incredibly surprised to watch the videos later to see there were only two gunmen with the guns they had, because my impression was as if there was two or three gunmen minimum with machine guns, because even all of the car windows, which are behind the cars, there's the beach, all of the windows were smashed, car window, like from bullets, windows had been smashed, people were dead. There were just bodies everywhere there were bodies. And it's a shock to see.
Let me ask you, have you been able to sleep much since then? You must be so wired.
Oh, I can say I'm definitely in shock. I mean, I didn't have a great sleep last night, and I did actually go to work today, but my head, I could not think at all about anything in my job. But all I can kind of think about is this at the moment.
Well, of course it is. Well, yeah. Thank you for your time. Maybe you want to speak with someone, because obviously you have witnessed extraordinary things that normally only people in the emergency services or in the military have to see. So, Tommy, I'm really grateful for your time, and I say look after yourself. I don't say that lightly. Maybe you need to just see someone and get this all professionally handled, and thank you. Best wishes to your girlfriend. Look after yourself. Thank you. You're listening to LBC 19 After 7 Headlines. Thomas Watts.
Australia's government has promised tougher gun laws in the wake of the Bondi Beach terror attack. The actor and director Rob Reiner has died in what police have called an apparent homicide. The British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's doctor's strike in England will go ahead. LBC weather, some heavy rain across northern England, in South Wales and the West Country, mostly dry elsewhere, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 clockwise from Junction 9 at Leatherhead to 10 at the A3. It's because of an accident where two lanes are closed. And then also on the M25, there are anti-clockwise delays to the Dartford Tunnel. It's following an accident where one lane's closed just after the tunnel exit at Junction 31 at Lakeside. In Camberwell, Camberwell Church Street remains closed both ways. That's after an accident. Also, problems in Chingford. Walthamstow Avenue is partially blocked eastbound at Hall Lane, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line, and Thames Link trains are delayed between Raynham and Gillingham following a signal failure.
This is LBC.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head to BetVictor.
Why's that?
They've got more features than you can shake a stick at. They've got cash out, they've got in-play football, racing, tennis, all your favourite sports. They've got the best odds guaranteed on racing, and then there's the Bet Builder. And, of course, you've got the lucky dip. Blimey, dip! I've got to go, fella. It's Nacho Night at Casa Redknapp. And holy moly, I forgot the guacamole. Ay, caramba.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus, terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello and... a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's already 22 minutes after 7, a little bit behind the clock, but Tommy, the eyewitness, is extraordinary. We had to obvious here as much as we could. Just very quickly, the headlines, you won't be surprised. The whole range are from the Daily Mirror, horror and heroism at Bondi, to the Times, bloodbath at Bondi Beach, the male hero of the Bondi Beach massacre, and that's the Daily Express as well, the hero of Bondi Beach. It's also the front page of the LBC app. Australia must strengthen gun laws. And let's go to Australia and just look at a couple of the front pages there. The Sydney Morning Herald, Bondi terror, with a very powerful picture, and the Courier Mail, a picture of the gunman, pure evil. And slaughter of the innocents is for the advertiser. Let's move on, because we're asking, could that ever happen here? Not, of course, noting the horrors that played out at the Manchester synagogue in October, but on this scale. Dave Rich is Policy Director at Community Security Trust, and that's an organisation that's put together to provide security for Jewish people at things like events and schools and synagogues and whatever, and for the purpose of full clarification, I serve on one of the boards. Dave, everyone is asking, well, many questions they're asking. First is, how safe are British Jews this morning? Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Nick.
Our thoughts this morning are, of course, with the victims and their families in Australia and with the Jewish community and wider community there. But, of course, thoughts here in the Jewish community are turning to exactly the question you've asked. We had a terrorist attack against the Jewish community here in the UK just 2 months ago, the first fatal attack on Jews by terrorists in living memory. Two people were killed in that attack, many more in Sydney, but it's the same ideology, it's the same hatred. I think Jewish people right now around the world are frightened about anti-Semitism. We've seen for 2 years or more increase in anti-Jewish hatred, increases in hate crimes. We've seen violent incitement online, on the streets. There's a sense in the Jewish community that this has not been tackled properly and that this is the outcome, rightly or wrongly. That's how Jewish people are feeling.
Well, let's look at some of the research that you do, Dave. In the UK, there were 1,521 incidents of anti-Semitism, 8 a day in the 6 months to June this year. That's in the United Kingdom, Dave.
But ever since the October 7th attack by Hamas in Israel 2 years ago and through the war that's happened ever since then, we've had levels of anti-Jewish hate crime in this country that are so much higher than happened before that date. Huge spikes. It's carrying on this year. And this is just what's reported. We know that there is so much every day that Jewish people just have to put up with in their workplace, online, in the streets. And they don't report it to anyone because it's just become so normal. And we should never accept it as normal. And I think the challenge here is for everybody, whoever they are, wherever they are, to recognise the seriousness of the situation we're in and stand up against it.
Lastly, you'll be aware that the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has said, and I quote, 4 months ago, I wrote to the Australian Prime Minister that your policy, i.e. the recognition of the Palestinian state, is pouring oil on the fire of anti-Semitism. What credence do you give that, Dave Rich?
You know, honestly, I'm not interested in arguments between different governments about this. This is a really serious problem that is affecting Jewish people every single day. It's now taking Jewish lives all around the world. And whatever country we're in, every government needs to find the ways to tackle this.
Grateful for your time, Dave. Good luck to you and your colleagues. Dave Rich is Policy Director at the Community Security Trust. Later in the show, we'll be asking, how is it we've come to a situation? I'll give you that number again. That's 8 a day, 1,521 incidents of anti-Semitism. And that sometimes Jewish school children have to go to school and pass baying mobs screaming abuse at them. How on earth have we descended to that in this country? And not just in this country either, of course, now, because we look to see what happened in Australia. We'll pick up on your calls, the calls indeed coming in from Australia about that, but we must, of course, reflect matters here in the UK. And it's D-Day for the doctors, but what will the doctors' orders be as regards industrial action? LBC's reporter Henry Riley is outside the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital in central London. Henry, morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, today hospitals are set to find out whether up to half of the medical workforce will be going out on strike. Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, said on Saturday that resident doctor strikes would be reckless and beyond belief given the backdrop of a flu outbreak. And it was on Friday during Call the Cabinet on your programme that the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, made this plea.
We've made a lot of progress together, not just on pay and on jobs, but on the NHS itself. Don't put that recovery at risk. Don't make lives of your colleagues harder next week, and don't put the lives of patients at risk. Work with a government that wants to work with you. Vote for the deal, and let's start 2026 with a good deal and a fresh start.
Now, the doctors' union have been polling its members to see if they're willing to call off the walkout. Health leaders, politicians and patients alike now wait with bated breath as the results are released later today. Last week, the BMA put the government's offer to members in the form of an online survey. The offer includes an expansion of specialist training posts covering out-of-pocket expenses, say, for example, exam fees, but crucially, doesn't include extra pay. Now, if this is accepted, the strikes are called off or certainly postponed. But if resident doctors vote against these proposals, then a consecutive 5-day walkout by resident doctors will begin in now less than 48 hours' time at 7 a.m. on Wednesday, and that will last until 7 a.m. on Monday. That's the 22nd of December. A BMA spokesperson said the government could stop the strike by tackling pay, conditions and trust with a credible offer. offer. Now, Dr. Tom Dolphin is chair of the BMA Council, says it's now up to their members, but that the NHS in the past has shown it can cope.
We are confident that the NHS will be able to cope. It's got very good at coping with short staffing and strained resources over the last few years, and it will be able to cope with this strike action just as it has coped with previous rounds of strike action. We've put the offer to members neutrally. The offer itself we didn't think was particularly strong, not strong enough for us to positively recommend it to members. So we've allowed them to see all of the facts. They've heard everything the Secretary of State and his colleagues have been saying over the last few days as well about the offer. They will make up their own minds about whether they think the offer meets their needs or not.
There is too also, of course, a flu outbreak, with the health service last week saw an average of 2,660 patients per day in hospital with flu in England. That's up 55% on the week before. Nick, the results of this poll will be verified by a third party, and then it will be announced at some point later today. There's little detail so far in terms of timings.
LBC's Henry Riley reporting outside Chelsea and Westminster Hospital in central London. Of course, as soon as we get that result of the ballot, we will let you know here on LBC. Callers, Jimmy, Jason, I'll come to you, but it's been busy. It will have to be. Hopefully you can hold to the other side of the news. And also coming up later in this hour.
Breaking news, TMZ now reporting that Hollywood producer and director Rob Reiner and his wife have been found dead inside their Los Angeles home.
And that's the news being broken by Fox. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, and LBC. The news is with Thomas Watts.
Police in Australia say a father and son were behind the targeted attack on a Hanukkah event on Bondi Beach. 15 innocent people, including a Holocaust survivor and a 10-year-old girl, were killed in Sydney yesterday. The actor and director, Rob Reiner, has died in what police have called an apparent homicide. The bodies of the 78-year-old and his wife, Michelle, were found inside their home in Los Angeles yesterday. The doctors' union is set to reveal whether this week's strike in England will go ahead. The BMA has been consulting resident doctors on whether or not to press ahead with a five-day walkout from Wednesday. LBC weather, heavy rain across northern England, Wales and the West Country, drier elsewhere with some sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The overwhelming majority of 20-somethings are not living with a partner and a young child as they were 30 years ago. And I do think some of that is in part down to the work that they are being paid for or being underpaid for, and the fact that taxes have become so punitive, particularly for young people.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Abandon your turkey. Rip your knitted jumper from your chest. The festive double bucket from $20.99. 6 pieces of original recipe chicken, 6 mini fillets, 2 large gravy, 4 regular fries, 1 large bottle drink. Get the deal. Believe in chicken. Until the 4th of Jan, subject to availability. Participating restaurants only. See kfc.co.uk for T's and C's.
I know every year it's the same. The ones you love most you leave until last. I just struggle to put into words how much you mean to me. Your hugs feel different to everyone else's. Your words hit harder. Your brew tastes better. But how can I say all that?
This Christmas, if you can't find the words, find the gift. John Lewis. Order by 12 p.m. on the 23rd to click and collect from John Lewis and Waitrose stores on Christmas Eve. Terms, conditions and exclusions apply.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, as I say, Jimmy, Jason coming to you as callers on the horror that's played out in Bondi. But let's stay with matters here in the UK and we get into the world of business. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. And it's cheers and fears then in the world of business. Let's start with the cheers, which regards interest rates. What's the possible prediction there? Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, nearly there, nearly Christmas, nearly the end of the year, and one more Bank of England interest rate decision before we all tuck into our turkey. The bank is meeting on Thursday and is expected by economists and analysts to cut interest rates by 25 basis points. That would take it down to 3.75%. They will be armed ahead of that decision with a slew of new economic data. We will see the Office for National Statistics publish the latest unemployment and wage growth figures tomorrow. And on Wednesday, we will see the latest inflation figures for the previous month. So there is still some division among members of that Monetary Policy Committee, as there was last time. Some people worried about inflation. Other people more worried about the state of economic growth and the idea that the UK could do with the stimulating effect of making it easier and cheaper to borrow money for people and businesses, which is the logic behind an interest rate cut. We do expect that cut to materialise, and we also expect then the government to welcome it and to hail it as the fourth or fifth cut of interest rates, I think, since they came to power. The problem with that narrative is I don't suspect it will hold for very much longer if it becomes clearer and clearer that any such cuts to interest rates are in fact because of or in response to pretty poor economic conditions. But nevertheless, a reduction in interest rates generally seen as good news for borrowers, mortgage holders, etc., some sort of stimulating effect for the economy. But we will have to look into the reasons why they're doing it, and they might not align with what the Chancellor and the government would like to say about the economy.
From cheers to fears, what's happening in the whisky industry?
Well, my mother-in-law asked me what I'd like for Christmas, and I suggested a bottle of single malt. But I'm not sure that that one-off gifting is going to quite move the needle for an industry which is under pressure. The Scotch whisky industry is facing a sharp downturn in production. Market conditions around the world are getting tougher. The tariffs imposed on the US, adding 10% cost to importers of whisky, that's hit sales of Scotch whisky, and the US being the biggest market for that. Single malts facing a further 25% charge unless a deal can be done. And it's not the only market, the US market, which is causing a bit of a headache. China, shipments to China have fallen by 31%. It used to be the fifth biggest export market for whisky from the UK. It's now down to the 10th. On the upside, there was that tariff reduction deal with India, which is a very vibrant market for Scotch whisky. Currently, there's a 150% tariffs on each bottle, but I believe it's now going down to 40%, which should boost things there. But they're also, like many other industries, struggling with new rules and taxes on packaging and energy costs here, etc. So it's a hugely important industry in many parts of the UK, not just Scotland, but it is facing a bit of a headache.
Let's stay with the booze business. And as Rick Astley has revealed to be among a growing number of publicans who are telling Labour MPs,
"Get out of my pub!"
We learn that UK hospitality generally is in crisis. Christian.
Well, I'm afraid that is the case, and it has been for the best part of a year, Nick. You and I have talked about it a great deal. But after the first budget, which hiked costs for those labour-intensive industries in retail and particularly hospitality, there came again at the most recent budget, at the end of November, changes to the business rate system. It's a bit of a sleight of hand. The government saying that they were going to instigate a cut to the rates that hospitality businesses will pay, which may indeed be the case. However, they're also going to revalue the value of the properties themselves, many of which will be increasing. So it might be that you're reducing the rate, but if you're applying it to a much higher business value, then you're going to leave businesses, particularly pubs and restaurants, hotels, in a much worse position in many cases. Not all, but many cases. And the UK Hospitality Trade Association have said that pubs in particular are facing a nightmare before Christmas. They say that firms are at their wits' end. Many, many places and establishments have barred Labour MPs. They say it's the only way they can get their message across now. And it's not just pubs. We're looking this morning at data about the extent to which major Christmas and winter wonderland such attractions are going to see big increases in their bills over the year ahead. The changes to the valuation of businesses are such that places like Winter Wonderland and Hamleys and Lapland Experience, I mean Lapland UK, which is in Ascot, is going to see its value, its rateable value, change from £150,000 to just under £2 million. Whereas Campbell Stables Market's annual bill is going to rise from 700,000 to 900,000. Hamleys is going to rise by just under £500,000. So when these taxes increases are imposed on businesses, they tend to be imposed on customers. So I'm afraid it is a bit of a bleak situation.
Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM. Thanks, Christian. Just to remind you, for those who don't know, Hamleys is the giant toy store on Regent Street, and it has outlets at some airports as well. Let's come back to the biggest story of the day, which is the massacre down in Australia. This is what you're saying. Coming to you, Jimmy, in just a moment. Adam points out, a shining light in this darkness is Ahmed Al-Ahmed, the fruit shop owner who risked his life to stop the attacker. Ahmed is a Muslim man. His heroism reminds us of our shared humanity, of people who care about people and who want to save lives across all faiths and backgrounds. Yes, I totally agree, Adam. That is the true face of Islam or of a Muslim, not the people who had the guns and were taking out that carnage against innocent people. Anne in St Albans, my heart goes out to Tommy, your eyewitness. What a brave man to run towards the carnage and not away from it. I thought that as well, Anne. My goodness, unless you're a police officer or an emergency worker, normally you run the other way. Joe in Wandsworth, you're asking, could it happen here? Of course it could happen here. People need to wake up. We're going to take the first caller from Australia, which wouldn't normally do, but Jimmy's in Brisbane. Jimmy, good evening to you. Good morning here in the UK. What is it you want to tell us? How are Australians waking up to it now? Oh, sorry, going to bed with it now, the latest news. Good morning.
Yeah, we woke up to it a little while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick, yeah, we spoke before. You know, I'm a chippy over here.
Yep.
And I went to work today, and this morning, obviously, and I work on a site with probably 25, 30 people.
Right.
And we age range from 18 to 60, and there's probably five or six different nationalities. And we agree on nothing. Nothing.
Right.
We agreed today, all of us, to a man, that this was Albanese's fault. To a man.
And this, everything, just remind everybody, this is the Australian Prime Minister. So why is it your PM, yeah, as in the Aussie PM? Why is it his? Why does it? I'm going to put it in this language. Why does he have blood on his hands, in your view, Jimmy?
Because we've been warned several times about all these protests, and loads of Jewish leaders and people have said, you're stoking hatred. You're allowing hatred on the streets. And he kept saying, this is all fine, it's great. And he has a history, back to his university days, of supporting Islam.
Well, he has indeed, as a young politician, he did attend pro-Palestinian rallies, which, of course, you can be pro-Palestinian and you do not support what we witnessed at Bondi. What has he allowed to happen? Tell us what you see or what you read about or you see on your local news bulletins on Australia's streets, because obviously we don't up here in UK. Jimmy?
Yeah, I'll tell you what riled everybody up today. About 10 o'clock on the news, the New South Wales Premier came on the news and said, we need to tighten down gun laws in the country. And we thought, for God's sake, let's tighten down laws and bring terrorists in. The laws on guns are tight as you like. You know, but if you're bringing terrorists, they'll get guns.
Well, of course, Jimmy, thank you. When he arrived, they didn't know he was a terrorist. The younger of the gunmen was actually born in Australia, as I'm sure you're aware, Jimmy. But look after yourselves, and good to hear from you again. Although, let's hope next time we talk, it's on not such grave circumstances. Jason, you'll be the next caller. Thanks, Jimmy. 7:42, but we go elsewhere. It is a busy news day today. Police investigating what's thought an apparent homicide after two people found dead at the Los Angeles home of director and actor Rob Reiner and his wife. Alan Hamilton's with the LAPD, Los Angeles Police Department. He said this morning,
upon arrival, they determined that there were two deceased individuals inside of the residence. The Los Angeles Police Department is now conducting an investigation at this residence here on Chadbourne, and that investigation will continue over the coming days.
Now to Charles Feldman, who regularly helps us with American Matters. He's a U.S. political analyst and hosts the SOS America podcast. But Charles, I understand, firstly, you live not that far from the Reiners, and also you've interviewed him on a number of occasions. How can you update us? Morning, Charles.
Good morning to you, Nick. Yes, I don't live that far from Brentwood, which is a fairly wealthy neighborhood where a lot of celebrities do live. And you're right, I did have Rob Reiner in the studio with me not more than a couple of years ago and interviewed him on the phone as well subsequent to that. He was very much a sort of walking encyclopedia of show business, but also very politically astute, as you could imagine. As for what happened today, the police are being very circumspect. And so a lot of what is coming out about the circumstances surrounding the death of Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle, is coming through various sources being leaked to to different news organizations. But there's no question, because the mayor of the city of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, and other political leaders here have said that there's no doubt that both Mr. Reiner and his wife are deceased. There are numerous reports now, Nick, that the method of death were, in both cases, that they were stabbed to death. And while the police are saying that they do not have a suspect that they have in mind as yet, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that there's one and only one headline. This is, I'm going to pin it on People magazine because it's their website. And their headline says, and I'm going to read it right off the page, Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle were killed by their son. And it is citing exclusive sources, and they're pinning it on one of his children who has a history of drug addiction. But again, I add and I underline, it is the only report that is saying this, and the police are saying about this absolutely nothing.
But here's, and I take on board everything you said and all the caveats, but you and I have been around the news business long enough. If this was a mad knifeman, you would have lockdown in Brentwood, you would have the helicopters up, you would have streets sealed off, and my understanding is that is not the situation, Charles.
You are 1,000% correct. Yeah. You're absolutely right. If they thought that there was a mass murderer on the loose in Brentwood, California, yes, that whole area would be on lockdown. Yeah. It is not.
You'd send in the airborne Marines in that area because you've got so many celebs in there. Charles, thank you. Sorry if he was a chum that you've lost a mate there. Obviously someone you've interviewed recently. Charles Feldman, US political analyst and host of the SOS America podcast. Coming back to events here in the United Kingdom. Well, we may sing, but actually it's the other way around. He's been saving our lives because of so many of you who have gone for your cancer checks. Do you tell me how you were inspired by King Charles and that good news, of course, just before the weekend. 7:45 LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Australia's Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has described the Bondi Beach terror attack as an act of pure evil. The Hollywood director, Rob Reiner, has died in what police have called an apparent homicide. A poll to decide whether this week's doctors' strike in England will go ahead has closed in the last hour. LBC weather, heavy rain across northern England, Wales and the West Country, drier elsewhere. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the western stretch of the M25. Clockwise, it's slow from junction 15 at the M4 to 16 at the M40. It's because of an accident and traffic is being held. Then there are delays on the Surrey stretch, clockwise up to junction 10 at the A3 from 8 at Reigate after an accident, but all the lanes have just reopened. And then on the Kent stretch, it's slow anti-clockwise from junction 3 at the M20 to 2 at the A2. It's because of an accident where one lane is closed. In Camberwell, Camberwell Church Street remains closed at both ways. Lengthy delays on the A4 Talgarth Road eastbound to Barons Court. A van's broken down, and those delays back over the Hammersmith flyover, so there are delays all the way to the Hogarth roundabout.
This is LBC.
Ticket, please.
Thank you.
Tickets, please, madam.
Sure, let me just... Oh, this jacket's got so many pockets.
No rush.
Got it on eBay. Vintage. One of a kind.
I just need your ticket, madam.
Couldn't find it anywhere. Then, ta-da! eBay. Total bargain.
That's nice.
Oh, thank you.
But I still need to see your ticket.
Oh, yeah, sure. With great deals on things you love, you can't help but say when it's eBay, things people love.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead with our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience. You can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Take the world's best snooker players. One of the most unpredictable seasons. At the electric atmosphere of Alexandra Palace. It can only be the 2026 Johnston's Paint Masters. Could it be Sean Murphy, Judd Trump, Neil Robertson, or world champion Zhaozing Tong who takes the trophy? One thing's certain. Nothing beats the Johnston's Paint Masters. Live. Enjoy our biggest ever fan zone. Watch in style from VIP sofas. Book now. WST.TV/tickets.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 11 minutes for 8. I will try and get to the call. It's such a busy morning. So if you're hanging on the line and you want to talk about the Australian story, which is wholly unsurprising because it is the biggest story, notwithstanding the horrific, what would appear to be murder of the Hollywood film director, I will get to those calls as quickly as I can. But we do have domestic matters to attend to. And let's talk more about a scheme now to try and invest in safe accommodation, particularly those of victims of domestic abuse. And here with more details is the Labour MP and the relevant Minister, Victims Minister Alex Davis-Jones, who joins me now. What is it that you're announcing? I believe those extra funds have been found. Where will they be going? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, the government has announced that we're investing a further £19 million on top of the £480 million going towards safe refuge for victims fleeing domestic abuse. Because sadly, for thousands of people at this time of year, at Christmas time, home isn't the safest place to be. It isn't a happy place to be. And these victims and survivors need our support, but they also need that financial assistance to help them recover and rebuild their lives. And this government has recognised that, and that is why we are supporting them by investing more money into safe spaces and safe refuge.
Can you give me an idea how many safe spaces or how many refuges this actually means on the ground, Minister?
So this is this isn't going to be extra spaces. I want to make that very clear.
This is
funding for more support that these victims and survivors can get, whether that is therapeutic support. It is to fund staff that help them rebuild and recover their lives. Just recently, Nick, I was visiting a local refuge in my own constituency of Pontypridd, hearing from the staff there about their vital and important work and how they help help families recover and rebuild their lives, and that is what this money is going to go towards.
And this is on top, I note, of the £480 million confirmed in local government and £550 million across justice over the next 3 years. Is that correct?
So over £1 billion is going towards victim support here to ensure that victims and survivors have that necessary support, because this is just one central part of our strategy on tackling violence against women and girls. It's ensuring that victims feel supported, as well as what the Home Secretary was announcing yesterday, going after these perpetrators of these vile crimes directly, and then prevention, which is at the heart of this, to ensure that we try to stop these crimes from happening or escalating because of the impact that they're having.
Okay, and how do we know that the money is well spent? How can we see the results coming through?
So we will have data to back this up in terms of measuring the levels of harm, whether that is on stalking, domestic abuse, on sexual violence. So we'll be using the crime survey data of England and Wales to measure how we have violence against women and girls over the course of a decade. But ultimately, Nick, I want people to feel safer, whether they're in their home, in the street, workplace, online, schools, wherever they are. I want everyone to feel safer in the United Kingdom, because that is my mission and that is the mission of this government.
And lastly on this, can we point to an increase in convictions or at least legal cases being brought, Minister?
Well, that's the aim, Nick, is I want people to feel that they have confidence in the criminal justice system again, to not only report these crimes, but to follow them through. You know, we've talked long and hard before about the current state of our criminal justice system, but it's our job to rebuild that and to ensure that there is faith and trust in that again, so that we can lock up more perpetrators and ensure that we are supporting victims and survivors.
Can we take you to events elsewhere, to Australia, as you are the government representative? You'll be aware that the Community Security Trust, which is an organisation set up to provide security, I'm sure you know, but I'm just telling the listeners, provide security for people who attend synagogues or Jewish schools or whatever it might be. They're saying there were more than 1,500 incidents of anti-Semitism in the United Kingdom for the first 6 months of this year. That's eight a day. Can you assure my listeners that British Jews are safe in the UK?
That's totally abhorrent, that rise in anti-Semitism that we're seeing, not just in the UK, but around the world. And can I first and foremost please pass on my sincere thoughts and condolences to everyone affected by the horrific attack that we saw in Australia yesterday. It is being felt closely by the Jewish community here in the United Kingdom. The Prime Minister is liaising closely with the Community Security Trust, as you say, the organisation that protects the Jewish community here, to ensure that anyone celebrating Hanukkah, all of those Jewish celebrations based on love, light, resilience, happening happening over the next 7 nights can go ahead safely. I myself am heading to Manchester this afternoon to stand with the community there to celebrate Hanukkah with them, with Rabbi Walker and his congregation, because it is only, you know, a few months since we had that horrific attack here in the United Kingdom, and the Jewish community need all of our love and support, and they need to know that we are standing with them at this time.
The Israeli Prime Minister has written to Tony Albanese in Australia saying, I wrote to the Prime Minister that your policy is pouring oil on the fire of anti-Semitism. One of the policies, of course, is the recognition of the state of Palestine. The United Kingdom government has done the same. How fearful are you that that could bring these sort of events here?
Well, sadly, Nick, you and I both know that anti-Semitism is the world's oldest hatred, and attacks on our Jewish community have been happening long before, sadly, what happened on the 7th of October on the Hamas attack on Israel. And Palestinian statehood is something that we all need to protect. I'm proud that the government has recognised a Palestinian state. It is the only way to ensure a two-state solution in the Middle East and long-term peace. We need a safe and secure Israel alongside a safe and sustainable Palestine. And that is something that this government is determined to protect. But ultimately, right now, we need to ensure that our Jewish community here in the United Kingdom feel safe, they feel supported, and they know that we are standing with them. That is exactly what we're doing.
Yes, there's a conversation about exactly what happened at number 10 yesterday morning, because the Prime Minister put out a social media post: as Jewish communities come together to celebrate Hanukkah, I send my warmest wishes to families across the UK and around the world. Well, 1 hour and 12 minutes prior to that, 15 people have been shot dead on Bondi Beach. Why was he so late? Why would he put that message out an hour and 12 minutes later?
So the Prime Minister was expressing his support for our Jewish festivals, for Hanukkah, sending it out.
Yes. But why no reference to the horrific events in Australia?
As soon as what came to light happened, the Prime Minister did post about this. He spoke to his counterpart, Anthony Albanese, in Australia, as did the Home Secretary speak to her counterpart, to ensure that we had all the relevant facts and that our condolences were felt as strongly as possible.
But it took an hour and 12 minutes?
It's important that we had all of the information, that we knew that this was a direct attack on the Jewish community, that we didn't get ahead of ourselves and unintentionally spread misinformation. It's important that we had the information, and as soon as we did, the Prime Minister condemned the attacks and put support out there for the Australian community and for all of the Jewish community.
All right, lastly, probably not so much in your department, but elsewhere, how nervous are you that we might hear from the resident doctors today that there could be industrial action starting in just 48 hours' time, Minister?
Well, again, I share the sentiments of the Health Secretary and everyone calling on resident doctors and the BMA and the leadership of the BMA to do the right thing here, to be responsible and to work with us on supporting our NHS and to help recover and rebuild our NHS, because that is what the public need, that's what the NHS needs, that's what we all need. So the deal is on the table, and I urge them to work with us to accept that deal.
Safe travels to Manchester. Thank you for your time today. Victims Minister Alex Davis-Jones talking about how it will now in total be somewhere in the region of £1 billion to provide various services and other aspects for victims of domestic abuse. 4 to 8 the time. Now, so we can get to more of your callers. Jason, in Jerusalem, thank you for hanging on the line. What is the point you want to make, sir? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Firstly, just looking back on that absolute mess from number 10 yesterday morning, it's notable that I think only Nigel Farage was the only British politician who came out straight away with a response
really?
Condemning the attack.
That's
very, very appreciated by people in Israel and the Jewish community. But listen, this is the point, Nick. People want to blame the policies of the Israeli government for the attacks on Jewish communities. They need to understand the policies of the Israeli government, like them or loathe them, are the result of the attacks on the Jewish community, right? The attack against the Jewish community attack, the terrorist attack on October 7th, led to Israel's response. The same people who go and murder people around Gaza in Israel are the same people shooting partygoers in Bondi Beach and synagogue worshippers in Manchester. It's the same hatred. It was a father and a son, Nick. Imagine what education they're learning at home, where a father and a son go out together on a Sunday to murder Jews. If we don't tackle that in the West, We're done. If you continue to import terrorists, that's what's going to happen.
How is it to be tackled in the West, to use your expression?
Yeah, every time someone comes up on the street with a Palestinian flag or a Hezbollah flag and starts shouting, gas the Jews, you put them in jail.
I have to tell you that, of course, if you were to say, gas the Jews, then you are facing possible arrest.
Not in Australia. That's
I'm so sorry. I thought you meant the United Kingdom. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, in the United Kingdom, you know, we see, unfortunately, the police need to wise up a bit. We hear chants in Arabic, it's Bachal Yehud, meaning murder the Jews. The police don't understand it and they don't come down on it.
You know, the so are you in the UK now or in Australia, you're saying?
I'm not in the UK. But
no, 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 what you're saying, those chanting, is that chanting in the United Kingdom?
In the UK, you hear many, many chants against the Jewish community that the police don't understand. And unfortunately, just go on social media and see what the younger generation are being fed. The absolute diatribe of hatred.
Can I just lastly, and I've only got a bit before I have to go to the news, the Australian Prime Minister is criticised by Benjamin Netanyahu because of the recognition in part of the state of Palestine fueling this. Where do you stand on that? And of course, the UK doing a similar thing.
It's really simple. It's after Jews are murdered by terrorists, by Palestinian terrorists, you come out and reward those Palestinian terrorists, then whether or not there should be a Palestinian state in the future, the message you're giving here and now is kill Jews, be rewarded. And that's it's illiteracy, political illiteracy by Keir Starmer, by Albanese, by so many others in the West who think by appeasing Palestinian terrorists, they're going to stop the terror. They're not appeasing them, they're encouraging them, Nick.
Jason, thank you for input. More calls coming on that. You stay safe today in Jerusalem. The conversation will continue. The music means we're going to give you news headlines, but after that we will return to events in Bondi Beach and ask, could it happen here? We'll also be looking at or trying to track down what is the cause or the root of anti-Semitism way, 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 centuries back. In other news, God save the King.
Thanks to early diagnosis, effective intervention and adherence to doctor's orders, my own schedule of cancer treatment can be reduced in the new year.
As the King reportedly saves us, as many have gone to cancer checks, do you tell us your views and hopefully the good news on that. And the head of MI6 will say that the front line is everywhere in the fight against Russia. Those stories and more follow the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the Australian Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has promised to push for tougher gun laws after the Bondi Beach terror attack. Authorities have revealed more details about the targeted attack on a Hanukkah event yesterday. 15 people, including a 10-year-old girl, were killed. Mal Lanyon is the Commissioner of New South Wales Police.
We are satisfied that there were two offenders involved in yesterday's incident. The offenders are a 50-year-old. And 24-year-old male, who are father and son. The 50-year-old is deceased. 24-year-old is currently in hospital at the moment.
Hanukkah events around the world have turned into vigils in the wake of the attack in Sydney. Dave Rich is from the Community Security Trust charity.
Jewish people are very frightened right now, but also largely feeling very defiant and wanting to show that this will not stop our way of life. There are Hanukkah events going on across the country in the UK all week. We've been in discussions with police about increasing the security and the policing at all those events.
The King says he is appalled and saddened by what he's called the most dreadful act of anti-Semitism. The Hollywood director Rob Reiner and his wife have died at their home in Los Angeles. Police say they are investigating an apparent homicide after their bodies were discovered yesterday. Reiner was best known for directing films including When Harry Met Sally and This Is Spinal Tap. The British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's doctors' strike in England will go ahead. The union's been polling resident doctors on whether to press ahead with the action. LBC's Henry Riley has more.
The five-day walkout will start at 7 a.m. on Wednesday, but could be called off with the BMA polling its members on the government's latest pay offer. Now, that includes an expansion of specialist training posts and covering expenses such as exam fees, but does not include extra pay. And all of this with the backdrop of a sharp increase in flu cases in the NHS in England last week. The result of the poll will be verified by a third party. If accepted, a formal referendum of resident doctors will follow. If not, then strikes will go ahead. Henry Riley, LBC, Chelsea and Westminster Hospital.
The British government has condemned the prosecution of the Hong Kong media tycoon Jimmy Lai. The 78-year-old pro-democracy campaigner, who is a British citizen, is facing life in prison. And Sir Cliff Richard has revealed he has been treated for prostate cancer in the past year. He says the disease has gone at the moment. Sir Cliff, who is 85, is backing calls for a national screening campaign for men. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 96.49 after closing down 54 on Friday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, heavy rain across England, Northern England, Wales and the West Country, dry elsewhere with some sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 13 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together, they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsburys.co.uk/help/nectar-prices.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 4 minutes after eight on Monday, December the 15th. Horror at Hanukkah on Bondi Beach, but we're asking, could it happen here? And what is the root cause of this anti-Semitism? Of course, this goes back centuries. In other news, Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood speaking yesterday about the need to crack down on migration into the UK.
I'm looking very closely at not just illegal migrants into our country, but legal migration as well, to make sure it's done in a way that retains public confidence. It means that we can deal with the pace of change.
And what a difference in 48 hours. On Friday, one Labour MP said our hard work is paying off on stopping the small boats. One in, one out is working. And over the weekend, more than 700 migrants actually made the journey in 11 boats, one of which had more than 80 people crammed on it. Why is that policy not working? More on the King's message, the King's speech on Friday, giving people so much hope in the battle against cancer. But if we're talking about battles...
From Russia with love, fly to you.
If only that were the case, because you will hear from the head of MI6 in her first public speech, Britain faces an age of uncertainty from Russia.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
So, two events at Bondi, as you've already heard on the LBC News Bulletin now, and now, of course, it is the evening there in Australia as they come to terms with that appalling massacre, now urging that there should be tough gun laws. They had very, very tough gun laws brought in back in the 90s after what was called the Tasmania shooting, but clearly it didn't work here. Fingers of blame being pointed towards the Australian Prime Minister, not least by the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. But let's say with Australia, says Anthony Albanese, describing the attack last night as anti-Semitic...
What we saw yesterday was an act of pure evil, an act of anti-Semitism, an act of terrorism on our shores in an iconic Australian location, Bondi Beach, that is associated with joy, associated with families gathering, associated with celebrations, and it is forever tarnished by what has occurred last evening. This was an attack deliberately targeted at the Jewish community on the first day of Hanukkah, which of course should be a joyous celebration, and the Jewish community are hurting today. Today all Australians wrap our arms around them and say we stand with you.
Now, I referenced earlier the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu blaming the Australian Prime Minister for the attack. He's written to Albanese saying his call to recognise a Palestinian state for pouring fuel on the anti-Semitic fire has been the result. And speaking last night, urged leaders worldwide to act more strongly.
Anti-Semitism is a cancer. It spreads when leaders stay silent. It retreats when leaders act. I call upon you to replace weakness with action, appeasement with resolve.
Now, if you're listening the first hour of the show, you'll have heard an extraordinary story from the eyewitness, Tommy. Now, Tommy is from the UK. He's lived in the Bondi area of Sydney for the last 9 years. Here's a little of what he told us.
I was actually at the barbecue area. So the area where the Hanukkah festival was, there's public barbecues there. It's a very popular part of the beach. I was there a few hours before having a barbecue, sitting down on the benches having a barbecue, and we actually left. We came back home. We went to get some more food, and we were going to head back down there. As we were about to head back down, if you can imagine like a really busy day, Sunday at Bondi Beach, and all of a sudden, within the click of the fingers, someone screams evacuate. Hundreds of people charging towards us from the beach, dropping everything, dropping phones, dropping towels. People are screaming, there's shooters. I just straight away said to my girlfriend, get in the car, stay here. And I went to try and suss out exactly what was going on. My first impression was that maybe it was some gangland shooting and that there's somebody had been shot. But as I was heading in the direction that people were running from, you could just hear continuous pop, pop, pop. Just kept on going one after the other. I quickly sort of understood what I thought was probably going on. As we were at that barbecue area earlier in the day, we saw kind of like Jewish people setting up some kind of festival, but we wasn't 100% sure it was even a Jewish festival. There were just some people starting to set up some decorations, things like that. There is also a children's play park in exactly the same area where there's lots of families and children all there. And we were surrounded by these people all morning and early afternoon as we were there. So I ran in the direction of the gunshots. As I arrived, I saw lots of commotion happening on that bridge. At that point, there was only about two or three police officers there. It was literally just, it was like a carnage scene. Everyone was fighting, screaming. The police were pushing the people. I wasn't actually aware at that moment that I'd run into the gunmen themselves. And I think they had just been shot. They were on the floor and people were trying to attack them and get to them. And the police were trying to push people away. And from what I've learned later on, they were trying to resuscitate one of them.
You did actually saw the two gunmen, did you, Tommy?
I saw them. I saw people getting loaded into the back of the police van, which I have later found out were the gunmen, because what happened at that moment is there was a few locals who were absolutely furiously trying to get into the van, hit the van, the police van, the window got smashed. The police officers were also completely breaking down. The police lady was having a panic attack and holding on to the side of the van. She started punching the van out of anger herself. It was just horrific. And at that moment, I was trying to say to the guys that they said, hey, like, is it just these? Is there more? At that moment, there was rumors that there was a third one. There was another one still around. At that moment, I walked into what you could only describe as a horror movie. I then crossed over that bridge, the one that you're seeing in all the videos of the gunman in. I crossed over that bridge and I went down onto the grass. And all I can say is that there were dead people everywhere. There were bodies everywhere. There were so many bodies and not enough people trying to help them. There were like people were putting blankets over some of their heads. Some of them you could tell they were just completely cold and dead straight away. There were others that were people frantically trying to resuscitate, and like three, four people and one person trying to pump their heart to bring them back to life. Everyone was covered in blood. There were fully grown men lying on the floor, screaming and begging and praying. And I then looked around and actually looked towards the children's park, where I then realized there was also a dead body blocking the exit to the park, and there was loads of children hiding in the park, screaming and crying. They were trapped in there. They couldn't get out of the park. It was just horrific, and the only thing I could do at that, like, I wanted to try and comfort some people. I sort of put my hand on a few of the men's back, but what do you say? You say, hey, are you okay? You're speechless. Everybody was speechless in that moment. Nobody had any words to say at all to one another. It was just, it just kind of a surreal experience. You're just experiencing everything that's going on. You're experiencing people trying to bring people to life. I then looked around. I counted about 11 or 12 bodies that were completely out cold gone in that moment. There was a lot more which weren't moving at all, which people were trying to bring back to life. There's an area just to the right of that where there's a very, very popular outdoor gym. Like, you can kind of compare it to like Venice's outdoor gym area. Everyone is on a busy sunny Sunday. This area is pumping. So there was, I then looked over there, there were more dead bodies all over the grass there. My thoughts in that moment, I'm actually incredibly surprised to watch the videos later to see there were only two gunmen with the guns they had, because my impression was as if there was two or three gunmen minimum with machine guns, because even all of the car windows, which are behind the cars, there's the beach, all of the windows were smashed, car window, like from bullets, windows had been smashed, people were dead, there were just bodies everywhere, everywhere there were bodies. And it's a shock to see.
Let me ask you, have you been able to sleep much since then? You must be so wired.
I can say I'm definitely in shock. I mean, I didn't have a great sleep last night, and I did actually go to work today, but my head, I could not think at all about anything in my job. But all I can kind of think about is this at the moment.
Extraordinary eyewitness account from Tommy, and we're asking, could it happen here? Noting, of course, the horrors of the Manchester synagogue. Ali in Slough, good to have you on, Ali. What do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Three quick points. Firstly, the slaughter of innocent civilians, human beings in Bondi Beach is equally as evil as it is on the beaches of Gaza. Number two, Albanese has got nothing to do with this. The fuel, the wood, and the match was lit by people like Netanyahu and his Likud government and Israel.
Hang on, Ali. These aren't Israelis or the IDF. These are mostly Australians. You have
agreed.
Absolutely. How can you say that? These are mostly kids having a Hanukkah party on the beach. Would you seek to take it all the way back to Likud?
No, I'll tell you why. Because you've quoted multiple times in your since 7 o'clock Netanyahu blaming Albanese. Albanese is protecting his people and doing what's right for his people.
Did you listen to the caller, Jimmy, who lives in Australia, so it's probably closer to the URI?
No, the caller's views are irrational.
Yours, I wouldn't say that your views are irrational. Why isn't Jimmy afforded? Why can't Jimmy be afforded the same degree of respect that I'm affording you now?
I respect
you. Just said
Jimmy.
He's irrational. He's living in Australia, Ali.
Well, listen, people living in the UK say all sorts of evil things and wrong things, and factually incorrect.
How do you know, sitting in or standing in Slough, more about what's happening in Australia than a man who lives there?
Because I follow the news and the point...
And Jimmy doesn't?
The point that he's making, let's interrogate it. You're an intelligent bloke and you're well informed. I'm not going to blow smoke where else, but let's just deal with the point. So the third point is from Shakespeare to Sydney.
Yeah.
The cause of anti-Semitism in terms of pogroms and so on is a European problem, and Shakespeare was pointing it out in The Merchant of Venice, the famous paraphrasing Shylock,
yes,
does not the Jew hurt when you prick him, does he not feel the cold? I.e., every human being, when they're treated in an evil way with prejudice, feel pain.
You're not seeking to justify the actions of these two gunmen, are you?
Why would you say such an evil and horrible thing to me, Nick?
Because I can't understand why.
Why would you say that?
Right, well, if you let me answer. Because, and I'm sorry to be so graphic, they've only just stopped mopping up the blood of the innocent people on Bondi Beach. And you straight away take us to Gaza and Likud.
I'll play back what I said. It's equally evil. I've got no ifs, no buts, no justification. For me, the blood of every human being, child, man and woman, is red, and every one of them feels the pain. I feel the pain of the people
Why Netanyahu so soon?
Because you were asking a question and pushing that Albanese is to blame. Albanese is not to blame.
Partly informed by my caller from Australia, who I say is closer to it than I am in London and you are in Slough.
Well, you can take that view, and I'm informed by Albanese making a... What did Albanese say in the wake of the slaughter in Sydney? Did he jump up and celebrate it?
No, he initially said, this is an attack on all Australians, which shows how tone-deaf...
He said more than that, actually.
Yeah, he said, which shows how tone-deaf he is, because it's not an attack on all Australians, it's an attack on all Jewish people.
That shows
how off the mark he was, because it wasn't as if he just walked through a shopping mall. These two gunmen specifically targeted a Hanukkah event. I'm late to the news. Best wishes to your family if I don't talk to you before the holidays. Thank you. It's 17 after 8. LBC Headlines, Thomas Watts.
Australia's government has promised tougher gun laws in the wake of the Bondi Beach terror attack. The actor and director Rob Reiner has died in what police have called an apparent homicide. The British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's doctor's strike in England will go ahead. LBC weather, some heavy rain across northern England, in South Wales and the West Country, mostly dry elsewhere, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So many problems still on the M25. Firstly, anti-clockwise, it's slow at Junction 3 at the M20 as traffic is being held following an accident. Then there are delays clockwise from 15 at the M4 to 16 at the M40 after an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. And also clockwise, it's very busy on the Surrey stretch from Junction 8 at Reigate to 10 at the A3, also after an accident. In Camberwell, there are delays. Camberwell Church Street remains closed both ways, and severe delays on the A4 Tower Garth Road eastbound up to Barron's Court. A van's broken down and there are delays all the way back to the Hogarth roundabout. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line.
LBC.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a sharing bag of Doritos Chilli Heatwave for just £1.45, down from £2.50 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of large stores, Doritos 180 grams and 2nd of January. Club card or app required.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Enough for me.
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you first bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble wrapped in dried cured beechwood smoked bacon with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Extraordinarily busy day today, 20 after 8. I haven't featured enough of the text social media that's coming in. This comes in from Colin Marks. I don't understand why people are asking, could it happen here in the UK? It very nearly did, in Manchester, on Yom Kippur. And it will happen again, says Colin, unless the government and police take material steps to root out the Islamic terror cells active under the radar. Same subject. Charles is looking at the aspect of gun control as is being debated now in Australia. He says there's no point changing the gun laws. Terrorists will get weapons, is it guns or knives? We need to get them off the streets. That's why it will happen again and again and again. And John in Hartlepool says countries recognising Palestine are culpable, but nothing Israel does is relevant to any of this. Very odd logic. Well, no, of course, come on, Simon. I've always said that, and I have said on record, some of Israel's actions have been completely over the top. Of course I have. But, John, you can't justify what happened at this Hanukkah celebration for mostly young people. Those two men were shooting down Australian, well, in most instances, Australians. It's nothing to do. And to seek to try and use that as some kind of, I won't say excuse, some rationale, let's use the word some rationale, is, to me, wrong. But we'll take more calls on that in a moment. Now to other matters. And we come back to events here in the UK. And on Freight was as recently as Friday. One Labour MP said, our hard work is paying off on stopping the small boats. This was referencing the fact that there hadn't been crossings for some 28 days. The MP going on to hail the effect of the one-in, one-out scheme. And then, unfortunately, the weather changed. And over the weekend, we haven't got the full number, but we believe more than 700 migrants have made the dangerous journey. 11 boats. This is just on Saturday. One of the boats, by the way, believed to have a 40-foot-long inflatable boat, believed to have 80 people on board. Now, you don't need to know a lot about boats and boating to know that that is perilously overladen. But fortunately, they did all manage to get across. So what of one in, one out? Robert Bates is Research Director at the Centre for Migration Control. Start where you like, really. The one in, one out, whether that seems to do any work, why possibly the numbers are increasing, or the fact that we have, of course, now hit 40,000 of these arrivals. Mr. Bates, good morning.
Morning, Nick. So I think we should first start with the Labour claims that they have been putting in a lot of hard work, and that is absolutely true. They've been doing a lot of measures that they've been promising would be able to stop this flow. Unfortunately, none of them are big enough and bold enough to actually really circumnavigate that huge demand that we do see of individuals up on the French coast. I think, you know, we've seen a raft of measures unveiled by this government, the one in, one out being the most recent and the most high profile that they have assured us would be the effectively the silver bullet for this crisis. But if we carry on trying to address this solution without a strong deterrent in place, unfortunately, we will end up in a situation that we're currently in where the only deterrent and the only thing stopping the boats at the moment seems to be the work of Neptune and the weather. This, we know from previous years, is the quietest time for small boat crossings. And I actually think it was a bit foolhardy for Labour MPs to go on record and try and claim in any way that the stormy, more turbulent conditions that we were seeing in the sea were in any way creditable towards them. So I think actually the underlying dynamic here hasn't changed, and we still see that there is a huge demand of individuals looking to make these crossings, and you do see footage in northern France which suggests that it is still just as rampant as ever.
Well, this back-slapping nonsense was put out by Tristan Osborne, who's the MP for Chatham and Aylesford in Kent. If he'd got in his car or got on a bus or a train and gone about half an hour to an hour down to Dover, he could have spoken to some fishermen who said they've only been out three times in the last 28 days and they were very rough. That's the reality, as you rightly say, isn't it? It's the weather, actually, that got them their 28 days clear.
It really is. I think actually what we've seen in the last few weeks, in particular with Keir Starmer writing to Macron, sort of almost pleading with the French president to sort of help them with this problem, is that they've realised that their sort of mismatch of different measures, lots of them, but not as really effective as a sort of as a bundle. And unfortunately, we really have now seen Starmer really his first measure to come in as prime minister was to scrap the Rwanda scheme, and we've effectively seen the Labour Party drifting back towards a position of offshoring and processing individuals overseas. We've seen them recently reopen conversations with North Macedonia about processing illegal migrants over there. But unfortunately, actually, we've lost a lot of time. And, you know, this is something that anyone could have told them when they first came in. You need a deterrent akin to removing an individual from the UK. But second of all, the measures actually won't be anywhere near as adequate. I mean, the Rwanda scheme had a lot of problems, but I think opening up a sort of very, very small fry version of it in the Balkans sadly doesn't actually go anywhere near enough. And I think eventually what we will see is the hard realisation with Starmer that, yes, you've attacked the Conservative Party a lot for the Rwanda scheme, and it did fail for obvious reasons, but you're going to have to move back to a similar position, but take those extra steps with renegotiating the ECHL, which is something that they've said they're trying to do. I don't know how successful they will be, to actually enable the removal of individuals to a third country.
And lastly, I mean, one way to control the boats, of course, is to take a rather sharp knife to them. And we did see that some months ago, very, very briefly, by some gendarmes or the French Border Force, whatever it might be. Was that really just for show? That's not, from your understanding, Mr. Bates, that's not going on at all, or even on a regular basis?
Not on a regular basis at all. I mean, and if it had happened, we would definitely have heard about it from the Labour government. They would have made a big song and dance about it. I think their current hope is that the French police will be stopping boats in water. But of course, the key criteria there is that the boats can't have people in them for safety concerns. So actually, what we will see is effectively maybe one or two instances of boats in water being stopped, but they won't have migrants in them. And therefore, again, the deterrent will be not really existent. And it will continue to be a game of cat and mouse in northern France.
Grateful for your time, Robert Bates, your research director at the Centre for Migration Control. We'll come back to talking about the Australia tragedy. But Lenny in Ashford, who regularly helps us on matters. You were the man, I remind the listeners, who pointed out that the weather is so key, because I think you're a fisherman, or you certainly got a mate who is a fisherman. It's been a pretty rough 28 days, I understand, out on the high seas. Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, it has been. And
it's only history repeating itself when Rishi tried to claim that his policies were working when we had very bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
And I phoned up and told you that his policies had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And now Labour are trying to do the same. And it's quite simple, Nick.
Well, I wish it was. It doesn't seem to be simple. No one seems to be able to solve it, Lenny.
Well, the whole thing was started when Javid gave everyone who crosses the channel a winning lottery ticket.
This is such a Javid.
And until you take the lottery ticket away, Nick, it's going to continue.
What are you describing as the lottery ticket? Just explain a bit, Lenny.
Well, if you're putting everybody in four-star hotels, giving them all their needs, clothing, medical, all the services they require, they're living in utopia.
What do you need? What do you say needs to be done when people get here?
Treat them the same, let them go on the list as anything, as the indigenous people of our country.
Indigenous.
Treat them the same.
Lenny, thank you. Do stay in touch, let us know. Give us those weather warnings, as you often do, about the English Channel. Thank you. 8:28 is the time. Let's go back to events. Not for just crossing the channel, we go to the other end of the world. We go down under to Australia and those horrific events on Bondi Beach. It was meant to be a party. Rob's in Tunbridge Wells. Rob, what can you tell me? Good morning. Rob?
No. Hello.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're on. G'day, Rob. What are you going to tell me?
I was to say, I'm an Australian. I live in Tunbridge Wells. Mm-hmm. The stuff happening down in Sydney is pretty effectively very, very distraught last night about it. But
horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just saying, like, Anthony Albanese wants to change, you know, gun laws. It's not gonna work. I'm a licensed firearm owner in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So my three rifles are with my father. And the hoops that we had to jump through to get license or to actually own firearms in Australia is very, very difficult.
This is after the Port Arthur massacre in 1996.
After Martin Bryant shot up Port Arthur, which was
35 people died and 23 were injured in Tasmania in 1996. What was the change? Well, I don't know how old you are, but what were the changes that were brought in after that then?
So I was pretty young, but my father was he's a military man, and he owned rifles. He owned some semi-automatics, mm-hmm. I think, back then. But automatic rifles, semi-automatics, and certain other handguns and things like that were basically blanket banned.
Mm-hmm.
You need a very specialist, or you need to be basically a police officer or military to get your hands on them. And I think it's only, bolt actions and some semi-automatic rifles are allowed. So the government did a massive buyback.
You have guns and your dad has guns because you are members of clubs or you live out in the wild and you have to sometimes, I don't know, shoot animals, whatever it might be.
So we're a member of clubs. I was a target rifle. Basically. But the question I want to know, with the federal, I want to ask the Australian federal government is that the younger of the attackers was known to ASIO, which is the Australian Secret Service, basically.
Yep.
How did his father get his hand on a license? His son was known Islamic State sympathiser.
Well, I mean, the worry here is perhaps his son was not a sympathiser, but then when identified by ASIO, there were no checks then done about the dad. That would surely be the worry then.
Well, exactly. Someone's missed something here, and it's caused... That's why people are so annoyed and angry at Albanese, I think.
Look after yourself. Be safe, Rob. Thank you. You've taken us a little bit late to the news. Coming up after the news...
From Russia with love.
But would that were the case, because you're going to hear from the head of MI6 in her first public speech about the concerns that Russia is doing everything it can all forms of harassment and other matters. We'll give you more details on that. It's 8:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, and LBC News Time, Thomas Watts.
Australia's Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has described the Bondi Beach terror attack as an act of pure evil. 15 innocent people aged 10 to 87 were killed in the attack in Sydney yesterday. Police say a 50-year-old father who was shot dead and his 24-year-old son, who is in hospital, were behind the attack. The Hollywood director Rob Reiner has died in what police have called an apparent homicide in Los Angeles. The bodies of the 78-year-old and his wife Michelle were found inside their home yesterday. A ballot to decide whether this week's doctor's strike in England will go ahead has closed. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has warned lives will be put at risk if resident doctors walk out for 5 days from Wednesday. LBC weather, heavy rain across the West Country into Wales and Northern England, dry elsewhere with sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking, and I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to Winter Wonderland.
The best skiing experiences start with the right airline. Book your winter holiday now on Swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming up, more on that maiden speech concerning the threat from Russia, 8:34. But we're talking about what unfortunately had seemed to be the progress it had made in trying to halt those perilous crossings across the English Channel. 28 days, no crossings, but then the weather turned. And more than nearly 800 arrived on Saturday. Kamar is in Barnet. Kamar, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Nick. Good morning. I just wanted to add a short comment. Basically, I've been in contact with a few Afghans in France and those that made it over to the UK through this one-in-one-out policy.
Oh, yes.
The one that have came over here, they were extremely happy. I was talking over the weekend with a 24-year-old. He was telling me that he tried to get in one of these boats for 3 times, and then eventually...
How much did it cost him? Did he tell you?
What, the scheme or the boat?
The boat. How much did he pay to try and get across the channel?
He said that he tried to get in this boat and it was costing him over $2,000. But when he was made aware of this this scheme,
yeah.
He decided to abandon all of that plan of getting into a boat. He applied and he was telling me that within 10 days everything was approved. He was taken to a hotel in Paris and then he was handed over a visa. And then it wasn't just him, there was other few people as well. And then
he was
they
handed
boarded.
A visa in France?
Yeah, in France. They gave him an entry clearance visa for 3 months to the UK, and then he was telling me that it wasn't just him, there was a few others also, there were the refugees in France.
What were the requirements upon arrival in the United Kingdom? What did he have to do?
He was telling me that the first process was for him to process an application for himself, and there was like an online form that he had to fill in, and then from there he had to send his location to the Home Office telling him that he was based in France.
Right.
And then he was called for an interview to come to one of the centres in Paris where he then he provided his biometric.
Right.
And then from there he was taken to a hotel in where he stayed in for 2 days, and from there someone came in with a visa and, you know, with his flight ticket. But it wasn't just him, there was like a group of them. Once they arrive over to the UK,
the United Kingdom funded their airfares as well.
Yeah, that's what he told me. And then from there, once he arrived over to the UK, he then went through another process of handing, and then he provided his biometric and gave them a short interview as to why he left Afghanistan. But he was telling me that the whole process was very smooth and very clear for him, and rather than jumping on those boats, it's better that...
Okay. Mm-hmm. Had he worked with the British military in Afghanistan?
No, he had a strong links to the UK. Basically, his whole—he was telling me that his whole family worked in the military in Afghanistan. And then, once the regime has collapsed, he provided he told me he provided a lot of documents while he applied through the online process.
Because what's fascinating about your friend's case or your associate's case is the fact that we funded the airfare, which makes me think that he must have assisted the military at some point. It's part of what's called the resettlement program, I think, of people who helped the United, or sorry, helped the Allied forces in Afghanistan. That's the reality, I think, Kamar, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think it was to do with this UK and European scheme that just recently been designed for one in, one out. And he was telling me it wasn't just him, there was other people from other country.
How many in total?
He said he was in, they were in a groups of five. So
Five. Okay. Yeah. He's now settled in the UK, or what is he doing?
He settled in the UK, but he was telling me that not a lot of people in France, those that gets on those small boats, are aware of this scheme.
Right.
So those people have to be made aware through some sort of a channel, you know, to apply through this. If they are like a genuine refugee and they want to get here, once they have all their documents checked, then they don't have to go through all of that hassle, you know.
Enjoyed our conversation. Kamar, thank you. Extraordinary story. I would hope it's because of also all the assistance he gave the British and perhaps other militaries, other armies as well. Thank you for that. Now let's come. We mentioned a couple of times, 8:38 is the time. Later today, in her first public speech, you will hear from the new head of MI6, Blaise Metrovelli. She'll talk about how we are facing, and I quote, an age of uncertainty, Russia waging a new type of warfare. The front line is everywhere, you will hear her say. She's the first woman to lead MI6, if that's important to you. She'll call out the acute threat posed by an aggressive, expansionist and revisionist Russia, under the leadership, of course, of Vladimir Putin. Mark Leahy is a former spokesman for NATO, now founder and joint director of the STRATCOM Academy. That's an agency providing training on strategic communications, as in STRATCOM, and joins me now. What else are you expecting to hear, Mr. Leahy? Good morning.
Well, I think she's going to be talking about this multifaceted approach of the Russians, and she's obviously going to focus on cyber warfare in the sense that she is being trailed as highlighting the need to operate in the cyber world as well as, if you like, what they call HUMID, human intelligence. And I think, actually, if I may add, you've got to look at it alongside that at the same time today, Richard Knighton, the chief of the defense staff, is going to be talking about the multifaceted, the multi-front of threat from the Russians. And he's also going to be saying something similar to the front line is everywhere.
Well, the front line we see in some instances also seems to be on the high seas. There seems to be an extraordinarily aggressive and at times almost brazen approach by the Russians. Is that a fair depiction?
Yes, I think it is. What they're doing is they've recognised, as we have but haven't done too much about it until very recently, that the connections between the world are not just in space, and in fact are still, in the main, under the sea. And that if you can cut the cables that link us to the world, you basically isolate us. This is an expanded thing that happened in the First World War and the Second World War. Undersea cables are critical to connecting people, and it's become ever more so because as we get into the cyber area, then cyber warfare becomes even more important.
You reference Sir Richard Knighton. He's going to be speaking at RUSI, the Royal United Services Institute. He's like, or it is predicted, he will say, the war in Ukraine shows Putin's willingness to target neighbouring states, including their civilian population, threatens the whole of NATO, including the UK. He'll go on to quote Dmitry Medvedev, the Russian ex-president, the Kremlin aspires, and I quote, to the disappearance of Ukraine and NATO. A comment, if you would, Mr. Leahy.
Yeah, what's interesting is that Medvedev and others have been saying this for some time, and we've not really taken on board that they mean it. Over the last few weeks, I've seen even more people saying something very similar. Well, when people keep saying the same thing, one's entitled to take it seriously. So they're going to be using various methods to try and undermine NATO. Now, we should remember that although we may think we're a long way from Ukraine, not only are other nations not a long way from Ukraine, our armed forces are really very, very small. The defense of UK depends on the strength of the other members of NATO. If we were standing on our own, we would fall.
Well, I refer you again to Sir Richard's speech, where he is expected to say, and I quote, "Our armed forces always need to be ready to fight and win." Do you think we could win?
It depends what kind of war we're fighting, but fundamentally, I think he would agree that we would win as long as we're on side with other NATO allies. I mean, if you take the size of our armed forces, which add up to 180,000, including Army, Navy and Air Force, they'd be chewed up within weeks on the Ukraine front. But the Ukrainians are fighting on that front line. So we could win, but we win in concert with other people. We are no longer able to win on our own. We're not a superpower.
Lastly, we talk about Ukrainian front line. We talk about the men and women brave enough to be out in the Baltic and on the high seas staring down Russia. For my listeners, for their everyday lives, Mark Leighty, how do they see this? Is it that sometimes their bank accounts are frozen, that there are outages on the net? What else are some of the tactics that perhaps hit more at home for my regular listener?
I think one of the things that the Russians are doing, and this is my area of strategic communications, the Russians are putting enormous amounts of effort in to create bad debates, dissension and diffusion. And they're also lining up to maybe cut us off when it suits them. They will be trying to hack into hospitals. They'll be trying to disrupt energy. Now, they want to be able to throw a button and to disrupt us without us knowing. But the other aspect is that they want us to be arguing with each other. The Russians want to be united and they want us to be divided. So they're actually putting a lot of effort into creating dissension with their own societies, whether we realise it or not.
But how can they do that? I read that they're virtually broke. They're having to call up kids and men in their 50s to go to war against Ukraine. Where are they getting the resources from?
Because they've got a war economy. If you go 100 kilometres outside Russia, outside Moscow, you will find a very poor society. Russia is not rich, but it's devoting its resources to a war economy. So if you spend all the money you have on being prepared to fight a war, you'll be able to fight a war. We don't spend that much money on being prepared to fight a war. And actually, to cause dissension within a society, to develop cyber warfare is quite cheap. It's a small number of billions, which is a lot more than we're spending, but it's not a lot in the great scheme of things.
Grateful for your time, Mark Leighty. You're a former spokesman for NATO, now founder and joint director of the Stratcom Academy. 844. Let's take a call on migration. What's thought to be getting under control, but a bad day on the weekend. Over 700, nudging pops 800. Tony in Chichester. Tony, your view. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. We didn't get any boats for 28 days because of the bad weather. How about someone invents a massive wave machine to create sort of like storm-like conditions in the channel?
Have you been on the eggnog already there, Tony?
Sorry?
Have you been on the eggnog? Tony, there are things called cross-channel ferries. There are fishermen and I'm sure fisherwomen who are trying to go about their daily life. There are people who just like to go out in the channel for a bit of fun. I don't think we want to be sending a tsunami out of Dover, do you really?
I did hear, though, on LBC, I think it was yesterday, that there were people from this country going over and puncturing some of the boats.
Oh, I didn't know about that. What, when you say people, you don't mean armed forces, do you?
No, just ordinary people.
But again, I wouldn't advise that, Tony, either, because they're going to get pretty angry. If you've got a bunch of, 80 mostly males from Sudan, Afghanistan, wherever it might be, Egypt, and you start ripping their dinghy, and you're not a police officer, I think that's pretty brave. Tony, be safe in Chichester. Coming up later in the show. Hopefully, it does appear that he will live longer after his announcement on Friday, but never mind God save the King, he's been saving us as record numbers have gone for cancer checks. We'll look at that in more detail in the next hour. It's 8:45, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Australia's Prime Minister's promised to push for tougher gun laws after the Bondi Beach terror attack. The Hollywood director Rob Reiner and his wife have died at their home in Los Angeles, and the British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's doctor's strike in England will go ahead. LBC weather, heavy rain in northern England, in Wales and the West Country, drier elsewhere, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very slow on the M25, anti-clockwise from Junction 4 at Alpington to 2 at the A2. It's because of an accident where one lane stays closed. And then also on the M25, there are clockwise queues from Junction 9 at Leatherhead to 10 at the A3. And that was after an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. In Camberwell, Camberwell Church Street remains closed both ways, and that's causing delays. And very slow on the A4 eastbound from the Hogarth roundabout at Chiswick all the way up to Earls Court after a van broke down, although that's now being recovered. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Northern and Bakerloo lines, and also there are delays for Thameslink. They're currently at a standstill between Raynham and Gillingham.
LBC.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Calling all young creatives! It's time to get prepped for the content production industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Daisy, a technical content production student in year 12.
We've already learned how to create content and work with employers in the media industry. I love working in the studio, making my own podcast, and can't wait to start my 45-day work placement next term.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Have you ever felt like your investment advisor is giving you an off-the-shelf retirement plan? That they just want to put you in a box? But who wants that? At Fisher Investments UK, we never put you in a box. We create a plan that's just right for you because it's only right for us if it's right for you. Fisher Investments UK. Retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've traveled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
We've got 11 minutes before nine. Let's come back to the biggest story. Well, the biggest story anywhere on the planet, isn't it? The events on Bondi Beach. Coming to you, Dave, you'll be the next caller. In the next hour, by the way, we're going to look at the roots of what's called the world's oldest hatred, anti-Semitism, which dates back centuries. But do you know the actual cause of it? I'm not asking you to know what anti-Semitism is. I'm pretty certain if you've listened to the show from the start this morning or you're just tuning in. Well, if you listen to LBC, you're going to be pretty well informed, so you know whether. But what actually causes it? Is it something to do with Christ? Something to do with money lending? What is it? We'll be explaining to you in the next hour. But just before I come to you, Dave, as the caller, speaking as a father of two sons, what was going on in that man's mind when he said, I'll tell you what we'll do this weekend. What's that, Dad? Let's get some assault... I don't know anything about guns. Let's get some assault rifles. I don't know what they are, so don't ring and say they're Kalashnikovs. I've no idea. I don't particularly like guns. I'm not a huge fan of them. Let's get some, and we'll go and shoot some innocent kids, mostly kids, down at home having a Hanukkah party. That is the most extraordinary thing. And if you recall, if you were listening in the first day when I spoke with the news editor or news director, sorry, news director as they call it, the news director, as yet, unless you can tell me differently, none of the family have spoken. I mean, presumably there's a wife, presumably there's going to be others, uncles, nephews, nieces, whatever it might be. I don't know. Someone around. Grandparents, granddad, I don't know. What on earth would possess them to do that? That's how we'll spend the weekend. We'll shoot.
We'll shoot some innocent Jewish people at a Hanukkah. Well, it doesn't matter if they were guilty, actually. Just shoot people at a Hanukkah celebration. Dave's in Golders Green. Dave, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you?
Well, pretty troubled, actually. This is very grim.
It is. Nick, the reason I've called in, you may well remember, Nick, I spoke to you about 5 months ago.
Right.
On my way to school, at a Jewish school. She was about to sit her GCSEs. Just for your listeners' recollection, I dropped her off at a school that had a fence.
Yes.
It's about 5 metres high. There's about 10 guards. Starmer had just announced the Palestinian state dropping at the mouth, so pleased with himself.
Yeah.
And I'm worried about my daughter's safety.
Yeah.
However, Nick, unlike some of my colleagues, or your colleagues rather, on LBC, you know, the guy that comes after.
Okay,
you,
well, he's not here, so I wouldn't talk about other callers, so just limit yourself to what you want to say to me, or more generally would help me along, Dave. But yes, and the point you is, and I said right at the top of the show, we now live in a country where, just give me 1 second, yours is not the only child. Children are taken to school and they have on occasions to go past baying mobs screaming at them as they do a day's lessons. And there are security guards, often from the CST, again, for full disclosure, an organisation that I'm associated with to provide security for them. On you go, Dave.
But Nick, clearly you know a lot about this. You've been a great friend of the Jewish community. But I must Nick, the reason I talk about your colleague, I must take you to task on something you said to me.
That's better. Okay, come on. Yes, much happier to do. You said
what about the kids in Gaza? Okay,
mm-hmm.
You've got to finish, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
That is what you said to me at the time, and I was pretty taken aback.
Mm-hmm.
Because putting aside the fact that schools in Gaza had rockets and guns and were used as launch pads, mm-hmm. you knew full well why schools in Gaza, kids in Gaza are not at school. My daughter, who I was talking about, had absolutely nothing to do with Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, Nick, is neither did those poor souls in Manchester or yesterday on Bondi Beach.
I was going to ask you a question. That's all going on.
Yeah, no, but Nick, my point to you is simple. By conflating this is the problem. And if you're a good friend, and you're doing it.
Right. It's incredible that the line would break at the... I don't mean to be rudely at the punchline, at the climax of what you were saying. Can I ask you to repeat? Because unbelievably, the line went as you finished. So what was the point?
The punchline is that my daughter had nothing to do with Gaza.
No, of course.
And neither did the two guys on Manchester.
No.
Neither did those on Bondi Beach. My point is, you are as much as anyone, and you're a great friend, you are conflating these issues.
But do you not, like me, Dave, do you not abhor the deaths of children everywhere?
Who doesn't, Nick?
Okay, hold on, sir. Hold on. So, I say again, and I agree with you, I absolutely know that Hamas will hide missiles, terrorists, whatever, in schools, under kindergartens. I have no doubt. But spare some sympathy for the children. Not necessarily now, when, as I said to one of the callers, and I'm sorry to be graphic, but they have only just stopped mopping up the blood of the dead. Not now, but as you've chosen to bring it in a conversation, yes, I do have sympathy for the innocent children of Gaza. Of course I do.
Nick.
Dave.
I said that at the time. I said I had sympathy, and I said I wanted the war to end.
Indeed.
My point to you is simple. People in Manchester, people on Bondi Beach are normal Jews going about their business.
Yes.
They have nothing to do with this war. And you should not be conflating. I'm sorry to be critical of you.
No, don't be silly. You can be critical. Go ahead, don't worry.
You know, I'd expect it of people that...
Understand why you're feeling, and it may well be that you have family or friends, because I know that there are approximately only about 250,000 Jewish people in this country, so you may well have people, and obviously your whole life. So I am going to leave it there, Dave, because I think, you know, those last comments, we can't let those go to air, really. But, Dave, thank you. Safety to you, your children, the whole family, and everybody. Thank you. In a related conversation, I'll ask again, what is the cause? What's it called? The world's oldest hatred. Something to do with Christ or Christ's death? Something to do with money lenders? What is it? You'll find out in the next hour. But we'll talk Russia now. David's in Worthing. David, do you view Russia as friend or foe? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you.
First time caller. I love listening.
Good to have you on.
I think it's absolutely amazing. Russia, I believe, is definitely not a friend.
Right. Okay. How concerned should we be?
Well, my brother is married to his wife, who is Russian.
Your brother. So you've got a Russian sister-in-law?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, that's it.
She's just come back from Russia.
Right.
Where she's telling us... Yeah.
You see what I did there? She's from Russia with love. What? Get old Matt Munro out again. Go on.
Yeah, she's just come back and she's told us that our friend Mr. Putin is conscripting another million people to help fight his war. And she's extremely worried about her brother, who's looking after her mum, being forced to go to war. A million people is what they're looking at. There's no way they can be friends.
How easy is access in and out of Russia for your sister-in-law?
She has to go via Turkey. So, out of the UK, into Turkey. And ironically, when she was coming back last week, Ukraine had sent a load of drones over Moscow Airport. So it took her 48 hours to get back.
Did you ever ask her the level of support? And obviously she has to be very careful, because I understand that if you're caught saying anything against Putin or the government, you're likely to be off to the salt mines or whatever it is. Does she pick up on the level of support or otherwise that Putin currently has?
We try and avoid the conversation.
Do you? I see.
Because it's not nice for her. You know, when she goes back, you know, they've fed their story, we get fed our story, and we just don't seem to agree, so we try and avoid talking about it for the sake of not arguing.
And she can tell you safely here in the United Kingdom her view of Putin.
I think originally we were the evil, but I think she's now come round to the fact that we're not the evil.
Right. Where did your brother meet his Russian bride?
On a cruise ship. He used to work on cruise ships. They both did. I mean, she's very intelligent. She can speak about seven different languages. And they've got two kids together.
David.
And it's unbelievable.
David, you go to the movies, right? She's a spy.
Yeah.
She's a spy.
She
is a spy, love. I'm telling you that for nothing. You check her links with the KGB. Can you get into the house today? Go through her possessions and see if there's any cipher codes.
Next time I go and visit her, which will be next week, I'll have a little look.
And if she gives you any perfume, don't use it, right?
I definitely won't be using that.
No, don't spray the perfume. David, best wishes, thank you. Let's go a minute late to news. Dan's in Newham. How do you view Russia, Dan? Good morning.
Well, I feel we're being primed to go to war with Russia, which I find personally terrifying, and we would lose. And it's not the daughters of the politicians or the head of MI6 going to fight on the front lines. It would
no,
be ordinary working class people.
Well,
and I think you know, if we look at what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan, where we went to war based on dodgy intelligence, we should carefully question what's coming out at the head of these intelligence services. Personally, that's what I think.
What you don't give her credibility in what we think she's going to say?
Well,
I mean, look what they're doing in the Baltic and elsewhere, trying to cut these cables. No.
Well, remember when we heard about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction?
Okay. That can't mean that for the rest of their days we never listen to MI5 or 6, can it?
No, but we have to question. We have to question. And
but again, I put to you what the Russians are attempting to do on the Baltic, in the Baltic even. No?
I think we just need... if we're considering going to war with a nuclear power, we have to very carefully analyse and take with a dose of...
Well, let's hear what she says. Dose of salt is the expression you're looking for. Let's hear what she says, but I think many would point to the activities of some of the Russians anyway as justification. Be well, the music means we must move on. And this good news just before the weekend. God save the king.
Thanks to early diagnosis, effective intervention and adherence to doctor's orders, my own schedule of cancer treatment can be reduced in the new year.
But what of yours? And you will recall that earlier this year, I had that prostate test, not informed by the king, by the way, by the loss of a sort of semi-friend. So we'll hear if you have taken some hopefully heard good news. And in other news, we'll return to, sadly, probably the biggest story of the day, maybe the biggest story of the week, the massacre on Bondi Beach, and try and work out what is the actual cause of anti-Semitism? Those stories are more following the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app. and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, police in Australia say a father and son were behind the anti-Semitic terror attack on Bondi Beach. 15 innocent people, including a Holocaust survivor and a 10-year-old girl, were killed in Sydney yesterday. Hanukkah events around the world have turned into vigils. The victims' minister, Alex Davis-Jones, has told Nick that a rise in anti-Jewish hate is abhorrent.
The Prime Minister is liaising closely with the Community Security Trust, as you say, the organisation that protects the Jewish community here, to ensure that anyone celebrating Hanukkah, all of those Jewish celebrations based on love, light, resilience, happening over the next 7 nights, can go ahead safely.
The family of a man who tackled one of the gunmen have described him as a hero of Australia. Video footage shows Ahmed Al-Ahmed wrestling the man's weapon away from him. Sam Kuchiara, a reporter with Channel 9, says it was extraordinary.
He decided very, very bravely to take matters into his own hands. We saw those pictures of the two shooters with those long-arm guns, and as they're firing into the crowds, this local father has decided to creep up behind one of the gunmen. He's tackled him, unbelievably wrestled the gun from him.
The Hollywood filmmaker Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle have been found dead in Los Angeles. Police say they are treating their deaths as an apparent homicide. Reiner is best known for directing films including The Princess Bride, This Is Spinal Tap and When Harry Met Sally. The British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's doctor's strike in England will go ahead. It's been consulting resident doctors on whether or not to press ahead with a 5-day walkout from Wednesday. The pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai has been found guilty of national security offences in Hong Kong. The 78-year-old British citizen now faces life in jail. The British government has condemned the sentence. The new head of MI6 is to use her first major public speech to warn of the growing threat from Russia. Blaise Matrelli, who was appointed in June, will say the front line is now everywhere. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago reopened at 96.49. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, quite heavy rain across northern England, Wales and the West Country, drier elsewhere with sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a 6-pack of Tesco Finest Mince Pies for just £1.50, down from £3 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores, Mince Pie 6-pack ends 25th of December. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after nine on Monday, December the 15th. Long to rain over us, and on Friday we heard probably that is the case, as the King announced that he is making progress now with his treatment against cancer. Also, it has been revealed many, many more people now getting screenings or other tests. Are you one of those? And hopefully you've got good results and good news. This as Sir Cliff Richard also reveals he's had treatment for prostate cancer. I'm not saying that's where the King's cancer is, because we don't know. But we'll look at that, and we will return to that story. Massacre at Hanukkah. But it is called the world's oldest hatred. What started? What fueled? What began anti-Semitism?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Question for you on this Monday morning as we get into the rush up, the run up, or even rush up to Christmas. What links this person to this person? The King's cancer message has pushed tens of thousands of people to check eligibility for screening. This, as Sir Cliff Richard has revealed, he's been treated for prostate cancer. He's 85, goodness. He said the cancer was discovered when he had a checkup for a recent tour. I was going to Australia and to New Zealand. The promoter said, we'll need your insurance. You need to be checked up. They found I had prostate cancer. I'm delighted to tell you
that, and in Cliff's words, it was not very old, and the other thing is that it had not metastasized, it hadn't moved, nothing into bones or anything like that. So I'm delighted to tell you that Sir Cliff seems to be, well, pretty much where the king is. By the way, I'm not saying that the king has prostate cancer. Interesting, of course, which, while it's great news that he seems to be doing well, we still don't know where he is. Does that matter? Would it help? Let's just for the purpose of debate say that it was a particular part of the body. And I wonder why, or is it understandable? It's nothing to do with me, everyone's medical records. But here's a little of the King's message, broadcast on Channel 4 on Friday night as part of their Stand Up to Cancer special.
This is a season when our thoughts turn to celebrations with our friends and families. In the midst of this festive period, I just wanted to ask you to join me today in finding a special place in your hearts and your minds and prayers for the hundreds of thousands of people across our United Kingdom who receive a cancer diagnosis each year, and for the millions more who love and care for them. I know from my own experience that a cancer diagnosis can feel overwhelming. Yet I also know that early detection is the key that can transform treatment journeys, giving invaluable time to medical teams and to their patients the precious gift of hope. These are gifts we can all help deliver. Throughout my own cancer journey, I've been profoundly moved by what I can only call the community of care that surrounds every cancer patient, the specialists, the nurses, researchers and volunteers who work tirelessly to save and improve lives. But I have also learned something that troubles me deeply. At least 9 million people in our country are not up to date with the cancer screenings available to them. That is at least 9 million opportunities for early diagnosis being missed. The statistics speak with stark clarity. To take just one example, when bowel cancer is caught at the earliest stage, around 9 in 10 people survive for at least 5 years. When diagnosed late, that falls to just 1 in 10. Early diagnosis quite simply saves lives. Now, I've heard this message repeatedly during my visits to cancer centres across the country. I know, too, what a difference it has made in my own case, enabling me to continue leading a full and active life, even while undergoing treatment. Indeed, today I am able to share with you the good news that, thanks to early diagnosis, effective intervention and adherence to doctor's orders, my own schedule of cancer treatment can be reduced in the new year.
Well, now, let's all listen to that. If the king can adhere to doctor's orders, I think that tells us how we should behave. Now, have a guess. Within 24 hours of that being broadcast on Friday night, how many people do you think had gone to the cancer research website page or web page? How many do you think? 10,000? Higher. 20? Higher. 50? Higher. 100,000 in the first 24 hours, and the numbers are still building. That's Twickenham Stadium with 20,000 people stuck outside. It's huge. Let's turn first to Nick Jones, who's Professor of Prostate and Bladder Cancer Research at the Institute of Cancer Research and the Royal Marsden Hospital in London, and joins me now. Can you put into words the impact the King's speech has had? Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Yeah, I mean, his message was very clear, wasn't it? Which is that if you're eligible for a screening test, you should turn up for it. Because, as he very rightly says, we know that the screening programs we have work, and we also know that people don't turn up to them. And we know that people who turn up are disproportionately from ethnic minorities and from more deprived backgrounds as well. So
I find this extraordinary, Professor, because recently, you may remember, Eddie Jordan sadly died of prostate cancer. He's someone I knew. Yes. He's a little bit older than me, so boom, I'm straight off to have my prostate test. I am of an age where a package comes through the post to me at a certain age and I'm asked to provide a certain sample. We'll leave that there. You know what I'm talking about. And I can't get it back in the post quick enough. Why are the people not availing themselves of this? It seems extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. I mean, it applies to, yeah, obviously the bowel cancer screen test is the one you're talking about there, I think.
Yes,
I guess
is, yeah.
People don't like fiddling around, you know, with sort of the full
ice cream
scoops
in their
poo.
Hang on, if it's going to save my life, I don't give a damn.
No, absolutely. But, people don't return them. And the same applies to not turning up for cervical cancer screening, breast cancer screening. And also, I mean, I went on the UK risk checker just to see what it told me to do. And it also highlights that there's a lung cancer screening program if you're a smoker as well. Mm. All of these things we know work. It's a no-brainer. You know, they've been put in place for a reason.
The words that jumped out at me from the King was he expressed his support and admiration for the community of care. Now, yes. Quite rightly, he is going to be afforded the best medical treatment, as he should, he is the monarch. Does that community of care extend across the whole of the country, do you imagine, Professor?
Well, I mean, you know, as we all know, the NHS is beset with problems, and all healthcare systems are, to be honest. Things are patchy. Some places are better than others, but nonetheless, things like the screening programs aren't comprehensive. It doesn't matter where you live, who you are, they will reach you, and the diagnostic tests linked to them are also universally provided. So it's not the case that if he will get different, you'll get different care in relation to screening, depending on where you live. You may have different access in terms of other things. GPs are not evenly distributed, for example. There are fewer GPs in areas with more deprivation, for example, where the need is higher, which makes it more difficult to access your GP in turn. It's a bit of a vicious circle.
All right. I'm grateful for your time. I will leave it there. Nick James is a professor of prostate and bladder cancer research at the Institute of Cancer Research in the Royal Marsden Hospital in London. Listening, Louise Stewart, who's Cancer Research UK ambassador and has herself been through a cancer and joins me now. There's an interesting article in one of the newspapers, obviously praising the good news concerning His Majesty, but also questioning, should we actually know which bit of him has been affected by the disease, by the condition? Do you think we should, or we should? And everyone is afforded their medical, of course. I'm not saying for one second that we should. But would it be more helpful if we did know what it was? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Do you know, I don't think so.
Okay.
I've seen people commenting that. The reason I don't think so is that I feel that the King, not just this message, but, he's spoken a couple of times about his experience, etc., is speaking for the entire cancer community.
Mm.
And there are,
right.
So if he were to come out and say it was bowel cancer or prostate cancer, I mean, I have no idea what type it is.
No, neither do I.
But you'd see a huge surge, wouldn't you, in either support for those or people getting checked for those. And what he's doing by highlighting this and this incredible tracker, which has been developed by CRUK and Channel 4, and as you say, the response has been unbelievable, 100,000 already, is encouraging people to go for all of the cancer screening that is available. Whereas if he came out and said it was one type, I think we'd see, with Jade Goody, remember, we saw a huge surge in the number of women getting cervical screening. Mm. So I think he is sort of becoming a ambassador for all types of cancer. He's absolutely right. It affects one in two people in their lifetime. And the one thing I would say, I've spoken to you about this before, Nick, I sound like a bit of a broken record, early diagnosis is key.
Yep.
The earlier something is found, the greater your chance of treatment, the greater your chance of survival. And that's the message from him. And I think it's a really positive and strong message.
Can I explore something else I picked up on, as I just did with my other contributor? He spoke of the community of care. Obviously, I say again, quite rightly, he's afforded the top notch. But do you think that is nationwide, that community of care?
I can only tell you from my experience, but at the moment I went to the GP recently for something which could be related to the former cancer I've had, and within a week I was taken in for screening biopsy, and they acted very quickly. The 2-week cancer pathway in this country, if you go to your doctor with concerns, and one thing I'd like to make the point, if I can, Nick, is that this is about a screening program. So this is about getting called for your breast screening or cervical screening or bowel screening. Remember, if you've got any symptoms at all, don't wait for screening. Go to your GP, because your screen, your whatever it is, and hopefully it's not cancer, but it could fall out with those screening programs. So on the Stand Up to Cancer on Friday night, we saw Davina McCall leading the charge, saying, you know, get tested, get screening. She found her own by, you know, finding something suspicious and going, and it was breast cancer. So my call to arms would be to people to really take up all the screening you can. You're absolutely right. If you get that envelope through your doorway, do your bowel screening. I know it's bit icky and people don't like, but get it back in the post.
I couldn't get it back quick enough.
Exactly. And this is free screening. Why would you not take it up?
Louise Stewart, be well. Thank you. Cancer Research UK Ambassador, taking us tonight. Your stories, of course, hopefully positive stories that you've been inspired by. In my case, it wasn't the king. It was just behind that poor old Eddie Jordan. And, of course, Lord Cameron coming forward just a couple of weeks ago as well. Your stories on that. 9:16 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Australia's Prime Minister's promised to push for tougher gun laws after the Bondi Beach terror attack. The Hollywood director Rob Reiner and his wife have died at their home in Los Angeles, and the British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's doctors' strike in England will go ahead. LBC weather, heavy rain in northern England, in Wales and the West Country, drier elsewhere, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 4 at Orpington to 2 at the A2. It's because of an accident where one lane is closed. In Camberwell, Camberwell Church Street remains closed both ways between Camberwell Green and Grove Lane. It's because of an accident that happened earlier this morning and it's still very busy on the approach. Long delays on the A4 eastbound from the Hogarth roundabout at Chiswick to Earls Court. That's where a van's broken down. On the trains, well, minor delays continue on the Baker Loo line, and London Northwestern and Avanti West Coast services are delayed by about half an hour between Watford Junction and Rugby, but Thames Link trains are now running between Rainham and Gillingham.
This is LBC.
Right, brace yourself. At Co-op you can get two pizzas and a tub of Ben and Jerry's for a fiver. Yep, a fiver. It's kind of a big deal, eh?
You're unbelievable.
Co-op, owned by you, right by you.
End 2nd of January. Selected products subject to availability. Co-op Crew Food Stores only. See co-op.co.uk for details.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Merry Christmas, my love.
Merry Christmas, Mum.
Merry Christmas, Nanny.
Happy New Year!
From the UK's first mobile phone call to the first text, we've been connecting you at Christmas since 1984 on Vodafone, the nation's network. The nation's network, Vodafone UK, supporting the nation since 1984. Learn more at vodafone.co.uk/TNN.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal, and we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to your stories, your personal stories, how you were inspired, hopefully, by the King, the good news concerning King Charles and your battles with cancer. Steve, you'll be the first call on that. But I want to get to a guest who's going to help us with something, because I want to come back to events on Bondi Beach. And how many times have I told you, in journalism, if you've got the who, what, where, when, why, how, I'll do it more slowly, who, what, where, when, why, how, of every story, of any story, sorry, you've got everything you need. Well, we know the where, it was Bondi. We know the who. One is dead, the other in a critical condition. We know the how. It was with some form of guns, assault rifles, or whatever. But why? Now, that's the intriguing thing. So as I sat down with the team this morning, why is anti-Semitism? Okay? So I asked my colleagues, how did it all begin? Someone said, was it to do with the moneylenders? Someone else said, was it to do with praising one God? I threw in, and I suddenly read, so I have colleagues, in their women in their mid-20s or something. I'm in my, whatever I'm in. What is the crucifixion of Christ? What is it? Where it is dubbed the world's oldest hatred, so we are going back centuries. But what sparked it or fueled it? Well, let's turn to contemporary historian, author of many, many books, most recently The Path of Light, Walking to Auschwitz, and, of course, educator Sir Anthony Seldon, who joins me now. Good to have you on, Sir Anthony. Gosh, you and I have talked about so many things down the years, and I've known you personally for many years. What caused anti-Semitism? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and we've never talked about this one.
No, we haven't,
well,
sir.
It goes back before the birth of Jesus. So it's been in various waves, Nick. It constantly, anti-Semitism re-energizes and reinvents itself. So even before Jesus was born, in the ancient Greek and Roman empires, that was the first phase when Jews were... some people disliked them because they set themselves apart and they were culturally different. And then second phase, after the birth of Jesus, even though Jesus was a Jew, Christian groups disliked him, and there was talk about the Jews had killed Jesus, and that led to a strand. Many Christians didn't think that way, but a strand of amongst Christianity that the Jews had killed their Messiah. Then, Nick, third stage, well, I'll go to this quickly.
No, please. No, it's fascinating. Please don't.
The Middle Ages. 1,000 years, starting at roughly 500 to roughly 1500. A new kind of anti-Semitism lasted for 1,000 years, where they were blamed for all kinds of things, for being different, for being secretive, for making lots of money, for standing out against Christianity, for standing out against... all other faiths, and there were a series of expulsions from England in 1290, from famously Spain in 1492. They were blamed for the Black Death, as I talk about in the book where I walked to Auschwitz, called The Path to Light, looking for good people, good Christians, good Jews, good Muslims, who were doing things to protect Jews and saying, no, not in our name, we're not going to see this this group persecuted. Then phase four, 19th century, this is really interesting, because then it becomes scientific and racial. Now the Jews are defined not just as a set of people with a set of religious beliefs and practices, but they're a race, and they're a race to be eliminated. They're a race with particular racial characteristics, and here you can see the beginnings of what culminated in the racial theory behind Nazism and the final solution, the attempt, as I talk about in this book, about the Nazis wanting to eliminate the whole Jewish race, the final solution of it. And they were preparing a museum in Prague, which was the museum of the extinct race, with exhibits from Jewish people. And then finally, the birth of the Holocaust, the birth of Israel in 1948, phase five, gives you a new reason to resent the Jewish people who settled in Israel, and in particular highlighted and spiked after the 7th of October 2023, the Hamas invasion. So, you know, it reinvents itself, and that's why it's not like other kinds of racism, Nick, in the extent... the 6 million murdered in 1941, in particular to 1945, but also all those pogroms all the way through history, the rounding up of Jewish people, putting them into churches, putting them into barns, killing them, and it's gone on and on.
And how does it keep energizing itself? How is it? Does it seem to be refueled or refreshed with such apparent ease?
Well, I mean, is there something the great majority of people, Christians, Jews, people of all faith, people of no faith, don't have this anti-Semitic drive. But is there something that makes us want to unify ourselves against the other? And who is the other? And is it something about, you know, different times Jews have been picked out, Nick, for their religion, and that hasn't been popular. There have been a lot of conspiracy theorists. Are the Jews behind the global media, global banking, global
that old one.
Politics? I mean, all of that's gone on, the culturalness. Are they different racially? The fact that, you know, often you can't tell Jewish people apart, you know, can arouse suspicion. I mean, are they a Jew or are they not? Are they pretending not to be a Jew? So these factors, many waves, many different reasons culminate. I mean, ultimately, perhaps, I don't know, Nick, I find it inexplicable.
Let me ask you this, lastly, aside from your writing and being a historian, your whole professional career has been working with children as a deputy head, a head and a teacher. When you heard of the events in Australia, which were largely targeted at young people, not solely, but largely targeted at young people just enjoying Hanukkah on the beach, so Anthony, how did you react?
Well, horror and distress and and incredulity. I mean, you know... I mean, you know, part of it is, you know, to any act of violence in American universities, the Ariana Grande concert. Yeah, you know, it is just horrific. And how, you know, what is it that we can do? Can we do things in schools to help people realize that we may be Jews, we may be different faiths, we may have no faith, but we are all human beings. And how can we work in schools to give that respect? A desire to look after each other rather than to be prey on the internet hasn't helped.
No.
With theories that these people are different and the solution is acts of hate.
But
no, it's acts of love.
I mean, education is the key here, isn't it? So I'm sure the work you did at St Dunstan's, at Brighton, at Epsom, everywhere, you know, Wellington, you have worked with your colleagues hard to educate young people about this and being accepting.
Good people, Nick, everywhere are working in that common direction. What is it that we share in common, and why is that much more important than what divides us? Good people emphasize what we share in common. The bad is, in my book and many people's book, are the people who try and divide us.
Always good speaking with you, Sir Anthony Seldon. The latest book, The Path of Light, Walking to Auschwitz. Sir Anthony is a contemporary historian, of course, educationist, head as well, and author of that book. You might want to talk about anti-Semitism. Important to try and give you how it's... I think it said there were five... I'm sure you can probably, if you subdivide it, probably more than five, but just five phases that Anthony identified. But it is the King's Speech as regards cancer that you're calling about now. Steve's in Croydon. Steve, this is quite recent for you. What's happened to you? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
Long time no speak.
Good to have you on. How are you?
Two or three weeks ago, I was having trouble passing urine, basically.
Right.
Spoke to the GP... And they sent me for an MRI, which was last Monday, the 8th, I think.
Okay. Do you mind my asking roughly your age, sir? What's the first number of your age? What are you?
I'm 71.
You're 71. Okay.
Younger than you. No, listen. Yeah, right. So on Monday the 8th, my GP sent me for an MRI scan.
Yeah.
So I get a phone call the next day. They found a lesion on my prostate.
Right.
And something on my liver.
Right.
So Friday, just gone, I was at my local hospital having 9 biopsies done on my prostate.
Wow. How long did that take?
About 20 minutes.
Oh, right. Gosh.
But very, pretty not painful, but very alien for a 71-year-old man who's never had...
Right.
Yeah, there's only one way they can get the biopsies as well.
I can imagine.
I'm not going to go into too...
No, I don't think we need to hear.
And now I've got a 7 to 10 day wait for the results.
Okay. Did they give an indication it all looks good, or did they not say anything?
No, they didn't say anything.
Okay.
I did have to ring them because on my discharge letter it said prostate cancer confirmed.
Right.
But that was a mistake. So that made me really worried.
How are you feeling?
Say that
how are
I
you
feeling? I feel fine.
But I'm without wishing to make you... Are you feeling a bit nervous or are you fairly...
Nervous. Really nervous. And, very stressy. I've got my kids around me who are listening to me and being good. I've got the dog. I've still got to walk.
Right.
And I did lose my wife in 2018 with lung cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I did speak to you then, but let me just one thing that everyone I've had contact with at the hospital, the scans, the biopsies have been 100%. They've seen a nervous fat bloke going in the door, and they've been able to bring me right the way down. And it's just like talking to you. I'm full of confidence now.
Good. And that is an important point as well, as I'm sure you know. Your mindset, your emotional approach to it, is proven to the world to be helpful. Steve, let us know. So when do we know then? Next Friday? This Friday?
Well, you probably talking about Christmas Eve, aren't we?
Maybe. Friday, well, 7 days would be this Friday. Other than that, if you do hear, in fact, perhaps we can give you a call Monday, a week today. Maybe we'll give you a call a week today and see how we're set. Steve, be well. Get that dog on its walk. We'll come back to this. Also, coming up after news, do you remember about an hour or so ago, I asked you, speaking as the father of two sons, we go back to the Australia story here. What made this, what was he, 50? Yeah, 50-year-old man say to his 24-year-old son, I'm sorry to be so crude, well, let's go and shoot some Jewish people. Let's go and shoot some Jews down on the beach today. And I wonder what went on. And I said that the family hadn't said anything. Well, I'm grateful to one listener, Amanda, who's pointed out that the Daily Mail's got some comments. And the mother, so this, I assume, is the wife, or certainly the mother of the younger gunman, has described him as, quote, a good boy, telling the Age newspaper, which is an Aussie paper. He rings me up and said, Mum, I just went for a swim. I went scuba diving. He doesn't have a firearm. He doesn't even go out. He doesn't mix around with friends. He doesn't drink. He doesn't smoke. He doesn't go to bad places. Anyone would wish to have a son like my son. He's a good boy. He's a recently unemployed bricklayer. He told his family he was going fishing with his father over the weekend. No, they were going shooting. But that's denial by the mother, isn't it? So what on earth made a father and son decide on that? We'll return to that story as well. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Farrar on LBC. The 9:30 news is read by Thomas Watts.
The gunman who carried out the Bondi Beach terror attack in Sydney were a father and son. The older of the men was shot dead by police. 15 innocent people were killed in the shooting at an event to mark the Jewish festival of Hanukkah. The Hollywood actor and director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle have been found dead at a home in Los Angeles. The circumstances remain unclear, but police say they're treating it as an apparent homicide. Resident doctors in England are due to confirm whether a five-day strike from Wednesday will go ahead. The BMA has been consulting its members on a new deal proposed by the government. LBC weather, heavy rain across northern England, Wales and in the West Country, dry elsewhere with some sunny spells, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Are you ready to go electric? With a complete lineup of rewired iconic cars, including the all-electric Capri, Explorer, Puma Jenny and Mustang Mach-E. Buy before the end of December and you can get a free home charger, up to 10,000 charging miles, and 5 years free service plan. Go electric with Ford. Book your Ford test drive today. T's and C's apply. For more information, search Ford Power Promise.
While all the Whos of Whoville were at McDonald's eating, the Grinch from his lair started plotting and scheming. Gherkin-flavored fries and odd socks will send them crackers. So try the Grinch's new meal and head down to Macca's. Until 4th of Jan from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary while stocks last. Grinched for adults.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Sky TV spectacular day of the Jackal, Amadeus and Barney Monroe. While on Netflix you'll see Emily in Paris, plus Stranger Things, so many shows.
Sorry, got a bit excited there.
Get Sky TV and Netflix in time for Christmas for a most wonderful price. Go to sky.com. Sky, believe in better. Requires Sky Stream and relevant Sky TV subscriptions. Minimum broadband speed of 25 megabits per second recommended. 18 plus.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
The King's Speech proving such a strength, such a boon to getting people to check their condition. Susan Thurrock, what's your story, Sue? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello.
It's not so much my own personal story, but I think the King has deliberately kept this broad.
Broad.
I've got a bit of allergy.
Oh, right, okay. So, have you had your flu jab?
Yes.
Good, well done. Doesn't hurt. Boom, done.
No.
Done.
But if he named his cancer, I don't think he wanted to make it about him. So if his cancer was one that, say, is particularly male, well, that could switch off the females.
Prostate, let's just say, and I hasten to add, we are just following a hypothetical conversation. So let's say the king's... Right, what does that mean, then? What do you think that would bring about?
Well, when he's talking about, you know, 9 million people are missing those appointments or not going to those appointments, he didn't say 9 million men.
No.
So, you know, if it was prostate cancer...
Ah, right, okay.
It could switch off women going for the pap smear or breast.
Well, men can get breast cancer, of course, just to clarify. Men can get it.
Yes, yeah. But it's not regularly screened, and if his cancer was found by accident because he's had an operation on his prostate, then that doesn't relate to those 9 million things. And I think it's sort of being conflated. So I think he wants to keep the message broad. You know, go for your invitation for whatever kind of screening it is.
Yeah.
You know, keep an eye on what's going on with yourself.
Without wishing to pry, as and when you're offered any screening or any test, do you make sure you always keep the appointment, Sue?
Yeah, I mean, mine's just breast screening now,
right,
having had a hysterectomy in 2004.
Right,
so I don't need that one anymore.
No.
But also, you know, the bowel cancer test came through, you know, happy 60th birthday from the NHS.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, because that comes through as well.
Indeed. But so, you were clear, were you? You sent the sample? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I know how you feel, but that's quite a good thing, isn't it? Don't you think that...
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's a strange thing to come
and
through.
And I think it takes some of the, you know, sort of mystique of cancer away doing these screening tests, if that makes sense.
How important...
You know, because if you're just doing it as routine, it's, you know, something might get found, but, you know, it's quite likely that something won't.
Lastly, how important is it, the work that the King has done in this area?
I think it's very important because I can remember when the late Jade Goody...
Yes.
You know, sort of when her cancer was found. I mean, she was only 27 when she
passed.
Right. And that was... And then, you know, there was a big uptake in women going for the pap smear test.
Mm.
So I think, you know, anybody with a high profile that comes out and sort of says about, you know, sort of cancer and, you know, go for your screening, you know, the message gets out there.
It does. Sue, be well. Make sure you do those screening tests and checks whenever you can. Thank you for that. If you have had cancer, and obviously you have survived, otherwise you wouldn't be listening, and hopefully you are getting better and it is in remission. When the King talked of a community of care, is that what you experienced? Or what was that? Because there are many aspects that you can explore with this story. The one we're looking at is screening and those who are not taking up the opportunities, which does seem to me very, very strange. And it also almost takes someone that you know or to whom you look up, whether it is a king or a politician, Lord Cameron, or an entertainer, Sir Cliff Richard. It takes one of them, really, to suddenly spark you. But if you then did get the diagnosis and you did need treatment and you have recovered or you are in recovery, do you recognise this community of care? Or is it something that I'm delighted to say was afforded to the King but isn't necessarily afforded to the commoner in the same way? What were your stories on that? Lawrence is in Wembley. Lawrence, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you, Nick. Yes, I'm a survivor.
Right.
I got the 5-year... surveillance all clear up for bowel cancer.
Right. Can we back up a little? How old were you and how did you discover it, Lawrence?
I never ever took the test for bowel cancer. I don't know, I just found it a bit abhorrent to have that test. But
it's not to have the test. You do it yourself, of course, don't you?
Yeah, I just didn't fancy it.
I suppose I'd better explain how it's done. It just occurred to me. People are having... Lawrence, give me a second. So when you reach a certain age, you get a little box from the NHS, and what I find extraordinary is that they use the word... I'm sorry about this, but they use the word poo. I mean, I know, but that's like a child word. Why can't you use the word faeces? Anyway, You have, they give you a little test tube, a tiny little thing, and you have to defecate into some tissue, whatever it might be, give them the slightest, smallest trace, let's use the word trace, pop it straight away into this special little tiny test tube, seal the envelope up, off it goes, boom. Not particularly what you want to do on a Monday morning, but if you consider it could save your life, I think you have to do it. Now, Lawrence, you were loath to do what I've just described.
Yeah, but thanks for you going through that. That will help a lot of people,
it doesn't,
actually.
There's no pain. It's just, you know, just a little bit. You're going to be smearing a bit of feces on
you. I had a perforation in my colon, which I nearly died.
That's going to hurt.
Yeah, in fact, I waited a week, you know, I was told GP, you know, take paracetamol and all that. Luckily, I went to the A&E, and the surgeon said I was lucky, because I could have been, it was a journey that I went on after that. I had several colonoscopies, several of these polyps, which can be what they call precancerous. Some of them might turn, but they like to pull them out. I was told initially by a general surgeon after a CT test, he said, no, you haven't got any cancer, no tumours. And I was after 6 weeks waiting for that result. I was absolutely euphoric. Dancing all round. Anyway, after that, I was referred to Mr. Jenkins, who's a colorectal surgeon at St. Mark's Hospital.
And he's been marvellous, please God.
Yes.
A world of pain otherwise.
He did an MRI, and he did find a tumour.
Right.
And but then I had surgery, and so I've come out the other. But
good.
Insofar as King Charles,
yes,
I disagree.
Disagree with what, sir?
Well, he didn't. He hasn't said what cancer he has, because it's great that he's saying.
But to Sue's point, and I a light came on from Sue, as often it does with my callers. Had he, and I say again, purely for the purpose of debate, had he said it was prostate, well, you'll know as well as I, sir, women don't get that. So women might have switched off to the King's message in a way that they won't if it were, say, bowel, because that can affect men and women
alike. Well, look, there's a lot of people with breast cancer. Will speak out about that. But you know, if you look at Bow Babe, if you look now at Lord Cameron, even now if Cliff Richard can come out and say that, I don't know, because it makes sort of conspiracy theories, you know, a bit what people want. I mean, it's great that he said, everyone should get tested and screened.
And that's it. And lastly, so you're on the 5-year checkup, which is, my understanding, is, you know, that's the gold standard. That's what you're going for a man in your position.
After you have a cancer, any cancer,
right?
Yeah, and you have surgery, whatever. You're surveyed. You're under a surveillance every year.
I thought you said five. Oh, I see. So you're in the middle of that now. I've got it.
After 5 years, if you're still all clear, they sign you off.
And where are you on the 5-year scale?
Well, I've finished in March of this year.
Off you go. Fantastic. Well done, sir. Finish with a chuckle. Thank you, Lawrence. Be well. Come back to that big story in Australia. Some of the, many, many reactions coming in. This comes in from Sanjeev. This is pure hatred of Jews. Unfortunately, people will not accept the roots of this hatred, and it's followed round the world by millions. Well, the very next one is Blythe, who says, in Amsterdam yesterday, a huge mob with Palestinian flags, red flares, tried to get at another Hanukkah event, chanting, kill the Jews. The police had trouble holding them back. Ah, dear. Same subject, this from Rob. All weekend, marches were allowed all over the UK. We have two-tier policing. Time to stamp out the hate marches and close down the anti-Semitic rhetoric. We might return to that. We're definitely talking about the King's condition in more detail after the 9:45 LBC News headlines, read by Thomas Watts.
Police in Australia say a father and son were behind the anti-Semitic terror attack on Bondi Beach. Hollywood filmmaker Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle have been found dead at a home in Los Angeles, and the British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's doctor's strike in England will go ahead. LBC weather, heavy rain in northern England, Wales and the West Country, dry elsewhere with some sunny spells. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the A21, the Seven Oaks bypass, going southbound from the M25 to the Seven Oaks turnoff. And that's because of an accident. In Camberwell, Camberwell Church Street is closed both ways because of an ongoing investigation, and that's causing queues on the approach. On the North Circular Road, a lorry's broken down just before the Neasden interchange, and that's causing delays back to Staples Corner. On the Underground, there are still minor delays on the Bakerloo line, and London North Western and Avanti West Coast services heading northbound between Watford Junction and Rugby remain delayed by about half an hour, and this is because of the ongoing track problem, and buses around South West, West and North West London remain disrupted because of the strike.
This is LBC.
Right, brace yourself. At Co-op you can get two pizzas and a tub of Ben and Jerry's for a fiver. Yep, a fiver. It's kind of a big deal, eh?
You're unbelievable.
Co-op, owned by you, right by you.
End 2nd of January. Selected products subject to availability. Co-op Group Food Stores only. See co-op.co.uk for details.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones, like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last. Subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey, from sofa to kitchen.
I'll get up.
For a number one golden mince pie, with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, and zesty limoncello.
With some cream...
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
We'll come back to the impact of the King's speech in a moment, but let's go back to the biggest story of the day, which is sadly the tragic events down in Bondi in Australia. Tracy's in Edgware. Tracy, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello, Tracy.
Hi. I've not done this before.
Right.
And
not appeared on the radio, that's what you're going to say.
No.
I'm sure you used a telephone before, yes.
Yeah, far too often as many might say.
Yeah, right.
Hey, here we go.
Yeah.
I was just, obviously, woke up to the news yesterday morning,
yeah.
And devastating.
Yeah.
And I found immediately, very, very soon after, from the political side in this country, that Kerry Padenoch came on and made a wonderful comment on, very, very compassionate comment on Twitter, X, whichever it is now, which I don't really follow, it just sort of jumped out at me.
Right.
And then Keir Starmer and Sadiq Khan, they took a while and they weren't very, I didn't find them very compassionate. And they fell sort of far short from what I felt they should have been. And as a Londoner, I really ask, I know they're saying that, you know, they're in talks with CST and that they're going to put more police on the game and check it out. But why? Why, oh why, oh why, are the weekly marches with thousands of protesting people, probably whom 85% don't even know what they're talking about, no, marching against, why are they allowed? The cost, the police time, is absolutely abhorrent when we need so much more. We're filled with hatred against the Jewish community. Not so many weeks ago, a young Jewish man was arrested for wearing a Star of David, and he was held, he was a solicitor, he was held in custody asking why he was wearing it. Do people in this country actually know the size of Israel compared to the rest of the Arab world? It's a tiny particle.
It's the size of Wales, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. None of the other Arab countries, I don't see them opening their arms and say, come on everyone, come to us, we'll have you. And many of the UK, and I, maybe I've missed it somewhere, have no idea how many Jewish people take up the population here. There are over 69 million people in the UK, yet there's only just under 290,000 Jewish people in this country. And I'm not targeting Muslim people, because not all Muslim people are bad. And
no,
as we saw
right.
yesterday, that wonderful man
very
who...
brave. Very brave.
Oh, my
brave
God,
man.
He is my absolute hero.
Yeah.
The Muslim population is 4 million in this country and growing.
Let me ask you this. How safe, after the events in Australia, how safe do you feel in London?
I worry. I do worry. I go to London. I'm not going to let it define me. And I was in London at an event, charity event, all religions and races there. Absolutely wonderful. Raised loads of money, which was great. And I came home on the Underground in the rush hour. I did feel a little bit concerned. But there were no flags being waved around me.
But here's the problem, Tracy. You, and I understand recently it's not, but you have enjoyed a life in this country because we are democratic and we allow people to have demonstrations. So I'm sure you're not saying there must be no demonstrations. Surely it's the content of each demonstration that needs to be looked at.
Exactly that, 100%. It's. I mean, I was in a vehicle the other night in London, coming home, and there was a sort of a little convoy of cars next to me, looked at me sitting in the car and started waving Syrian flags out the car window at me.
Right.
Don't know why. I was in a very normal, plain car.
Yep.
No idea why.
And so this is the problem that the authorities have, the police have, the politicians have. To continue to allow free speech and to allow assembly, what's called assembly in this country, free assembly or demonstrations, but the minute it starts to get into areas that cause distress, alarm or fear for whatever community it might be, Jewish people, Muslim people, whatever, that is when we start taking action. That is the line that has to be very carefully worked out, isn't it, Tracy?
It certainly is, but do we then classify all these horrible things that they are saying and calling the end of whatever it is, why is that still allowed, and why are these marches with sometimes more people on these marches in London than the whole of the Jewish population in the UK?
Right, yes, no, but again, let's say, I mean, that would be quite something, but let's say there's 10,000 people, and let's say that, and I don't think it'll be this much anyway, let's say that 5% of those people have got... You can't allow the other 95% not to have their demo, can you? That's not going to work, is it?
It's not, but when you see, you know, the marches going on in London that seem to have a very soft police attitude to it, for want of problems, how do you pull out the people that are chanting,
I don't know,
racist abuse, and it's racist to whatever religion and whoever.
That is the problem, and I have to say, in the past, I don't think the Metropolitan Police have dealt with it very well in London. I can't speak for demos in other cities because I've not seen it, but I did actually spend one Saturday in the policing centre in Lambeth, and I watched the cameras, and you can see they're trying hard, they're doing their best, but I don't think the early days, I think they've got better. I think now they are far more proactive, but it is difficult. Excuse me, Tracy, I do apologise. Look after yourself, be well. Last couple of minutes together. Let's come back to a positive story. In a sense that it was good news from the King. The King's speech on Friday was good news. His treatment has worked. He's in a good place. But what has the impact been for you? 100,000 people had been on that website, Cancer Research website, within 24 hours of the King's speech. 100,000. Nick's in York. What's your story, Nick? Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to say that recently I had a prostate biopsy myself.
Ah.
And it was absolutely no problem at all. There was no pain whatsoever.
Okay, let's just back up again with you, if you might mind my asking. What made you think that there was an issue? Did you go to a doctor? Was it a routine screening? What happened?
Well, I was found with a high PSA. So I was sent by my GP, yeah. But I wanted to say that, I mean, a previous caller indicated that it was,
painful.
A bad experience.
Yeah, painful is the word.
Yeah, it was not painful. I was done with about six other men.
Right.
None of us felt a thing.
Okay.
It was far less painful than a visit to the dentist.
Right.
And when you compare it with the alternative, which is to allow the cancer to spread through your body,
no.
It's absolutely nothing.
No.
I don't think... Now, there's a lot of horror stories going around about biopsies. But in fact, they've improved their methods. They now do a method called transperineal biopsy, which is far, far less invasive than the last method and far, far safer.
In layman's terms,
can you... nothing to worry about.
In layman's terms, can you explain what they do with that process and why it's less painful?
Well, it doesn't go up your anus.
No, but I mean, they just don't have to nick as much, take as big a sample is what I meant. Is that right?
No, they take the same sample, but you have a local anaesthetic.
And that's how they do it. And you're in recovery... And sorry, what was the biopsy result? I'm sorry, I haven't asked that.
Oh, the result is I do have cancer, yes. Yes,
I see.
It's been caught at a relatively early age.
Right.
But it's far better to know that than
of course.
To do nothing and let it spread through your body.
And do you see that community of care the King mentioned?
Yes, I think there is. Yeah, and I think the King played it absolutely right.
Yeah,
I think he was very brave to come out and say what he did, and I think he said just the right things.
Do we need to know where the cancer is on his body or not?
I don't think so, no. I mean, that is far, far too private a matter.
Okay, absolutely. It's just some... I'm not saying that we should. It's just that some campaigners are suggesting that it would help. Nick, be well. Good recovery. I wish you a speedy recovery. David's in Prestwood. Good morning, David. You're on the radio.
Yeah, good morning. Just wanted to give some advice to men who feel like they've got the cancer symptoms. When they've got those symptoms, it doesn't necessarily mean that they've got cancer,
right.
Because you can just have an enlarged prostate,
right.
Which is not cancerous, and there's a simple operation called a TURP, T-U-R-P,
right.
Which trims the prostate down to size, and everything returns to normal again.
Are you talking from personal experience here?
Yes, I've had this operation, yes, absolutely.
How long ago was that?
About 3 years.
And what were the circumstances? How did you know? Were you getting up and going to the loo considering?
Yeah, exactly the same symptoms as if you had cancer. Frequency, difficulty peeing, all the usual stuff.
Right, okay. And that was a day case, was it? Or were you put in overnight for your treatment? How did it go?
No, I was in and out. The operation, took about an hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in for a couple of days afterwards because they put tubes in and things
right.
like that.
But right, okay.
The recovery really was quite easy and the after effects were negligible.
Okay. Well, well done to you, and I'm glad, and again, I wish you a speedy recovery. A lot of people talking on this and saying that thanks to the King's message. Also, we do need to mention others, of course, in the field of politics, Lord Cameron, and although only today, of course, Sir Cliff Richard in the field of entertainment as well. All right, that means they're done for another day. Just to say that, as I said right at the top, we probably saw the best and the worst of humanity. The worst was what those gunmen sought to do, or did manage to achieve in Australia, but the best... with that, and I am going to identify it, Muslim shopkeeper who was brave enough, I wouldn't have been that brave, to run at a guy with a rifle or a shotgun, whatever it might have been. The best, the very best and the very worst played out on Bondi Beach. I'm done. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions. Put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. James is The Other Side of the News. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and there's not really a lot to add to that distillation of yesterday's tragedy, except, I suppose, the question of how it is best talked about. I'll explain in a little more detail after the news, but I thought it might be possible. In fact, I thought it was probably important to dispense with the butt Gaza position on yesterday's horrors. 15 dead, a profoundly and obviously anti-Semitic attack. Anti-Semitism did not begin on October the 7th, or with the foundation of the modern state of Israel in 1948. But I've tried, and I'm looking at a lot of the coverage, and I'm wondering whether it's possible to do that, and why we should try.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the family of a man who overpowered one of the Bondi Beach gunmen has been called a hero of Australia by his family. Ahmed Al Ahmed was seen tackling the man and taking his gun off him in Sydney. 15 people were killed in the attack on the first night of Hanukkah. Ephraim Mervis, the UK's chief rabbi, says he was devastated but not surprised by the attack.
Very similar to our response to the Heaton Park Synagogue terrorist attack on Yom Kippur. It was the kind of thing we knew was inevitable. We were praying, hoping that it would never happen. But no surprise, because of the tone on the streets within our societies, with the hatred that is being expressed to the Jewish state, to Jews, and to Judaism.
The victims were aged between 10 and 87. Police say a 50-year-old father, who was shot dead, and his 24-year-old son, who is in hospital, were behind the shooting. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has promised tougher gun laws in the wake of the attack. In other news, police are investigating what they've called the apparent homicide of the Hollywood director Rob Reiner. The bodies of the 78-year-old and his wife Michelle were found inside their home in Los Angeles yesterday. He is best known for directing films including When Harry Met Sally and The Princess Bride. The British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's junior doctors' strike in England will go ahead. Medics have been voting on a new offer from the government, including an expansion of training places. The government has condemned as politically motivated the prosecution of Jimmy Lai in Hong Kong. The 78-year-old British national is facing a life sentence after being found guilty of conspiracy and sedition charges. He was arrested in 2020 under Beijing's national security law. Cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin will soon be regulated in a similar way to other financial products in the UK. The Treasury says new laws coming in from 2027 will make the industry more transparent. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 62 at 97.11. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, heavy rain across northern England, Wales and the West Country. Dry elsewhere with some sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10. A very good morning indeed to you. Any developments as they occur will, of course, be shared with you imminently regarding the shootings in Sydney yesterday. I think it might be the first time it's happened to me. I know people who live by Bondi Beach, and I checked in with them just to make sure that they were okay. And then as it became clearer in the course of yesterday morning that it was a very targeted attack, targeted upon a Hanukkah celebration on the beach, I realised that it was less likely that your friends who live nearby may have been caught up in the terror. I can see why so much of the coverage today focuses upon the extraordinary gentleman who intervened and who disarmed one of the terrorists. I mean, crikey, what's the first thing that goes through your mind when you see stuff like that? I imagine it's what would I do that? Would I be able to do that? At first I thought he must have some sort of training. Oh, we don't know an awful lot about him except that he's a fruiterer. I think he runs a fruit shop. And as Nick quite rightly stressed, he is a Muslim. But I mean, what does that mean? Does he go to mosque every Friday? Is he devout? Does he actually worship? Does he believe in God? We don't know. But of course, it wouldn't matter, would it, if you were attacking him for his origins, just as same goes for Jewish people. It wouldn't matter how observant they were or how, quote, Jewish they were, if they were being attacked simply for their origins, as appears to have been the case yesterday, then why quibble? Why split these hairs? But I think it's human to reach for the hero more than for the horror. The Times gets it right, bloodbath at Bondi Beach, but the iPaper goes with the hero of Bondi Beach, as does the Daily Mail, and they're not often singing from similar hymn sheets. The Sun, Bondi Fiend's dad and son, that's probably the second traffic stopper for non-Jewish people. Obviously for Jewish people, the absolute moment of impact is the thought that it could have been you, the thought that these targets are being painted once again onto the backs of people who've done nothing but be born into a certain faith. But for the rest of us, the heroism of the have-a-go hero, if you like, and the fact that the killers appear to be father and son, that's another impenetrable, that's something else that you struggle to get your head around, isn't it? I'm obviously never entirely sure how to approach conversations like this. I'm not even 100% sure sometimes that there are phone-ins to be had, because phone-ins involve a little bit of to-ing and fro-ing, don't they? A little bit of tension. But something a bit odd has happened in the last few hours, overnight, last night really, and then this morning. And I'd like to talk to you about it, and then I would like you to talk to me about it as well. The first is this. I won't tell you what company I was in, but I was in company last night, and the subject inevitably came up. And I tried, somewhat clumsily, I don't generally get stuck into heated debates when I'm in my private life, because I do so much of it in my public life, but sometimes people expect you to. And you kind of feel a bit of a responsibility sometimes as well if you... But there were no facts that I was aware of that everybody else wasn't aware of. But I just caught myself balking at the what you could loosely describe as the "but Gaza" response. Now, in case you're new to this programme, I have been unrelenting in my critique of what has been done to the Palestinian people in Gaza by Benjamin Netanyahu's regime. And as a consequence of that, I have myself been called anti-Semitic. So I don't want anyone to doubt my clarity on what has gone on. But what we saw yesterday, I felt last night, should be separated from the broader context of conflict in the Middle East. And the reason why I felt that, and I thought when the idea occurred to me as I sought to explain to somebody last night, to more than one person, in fact, as I sought to explain why I felt that that was an inappropriate response, I'll tell you what it reminded me of. It reminded me some weeks after October the 7th, when you were being policed in your language and being told by many people that you couldn't critique what was going on in Gaza without condemning Hamas. So you'd be making a point about something quite specific and quite well contained, and somebody would say, but do you condemn Hamas? And it became almost frustrating, because of course you bloody do. But why do you have to keep asking me? And I felt very similar last night, from exactly the opposite end of what you could call the spectrum, when the "but Gaza," as if you couldn't really condemn or mourn. I went to church yesterday, which I don't do every single week, but I don't know, something compelled me to go to church yesterday as this story was developing. And I felt that people were policing our reactions to it again by simply saying, "but Gaza." And what I said last night, and it kind of ended the conversation, really, but not in a, I hope, an uncomfortable way. We'll have to see. I just pointed out that Jewish people were attacked, murdered, persecuted long before October the 7th, 2023, long before the formation of the modern state of Israel in